impact. But the key thing also is that it was confirmed, obviously, some may say it's views and opinions from those that gave input, that really the pace of transformation over and above a financial services charter and scorecard that has been developed, but based on the views that were given, over and above that, the rate or the pace of transformation is very slow. And then obviously the varying topics were also interesting for us to take note of. We did touch base strongly so on the role of the state in facilitating or creating that enabling environment for the desired transformation of the sector. Strong emphasis on ownership, you know, and the levels of ownership of the various instruments and assets within the sector itself. And then obviously the formulation of state or corporate banks, alternative ways of banking, that came out strongly. And those things we don't find, obviously, within the current financial services charter. And then obviously consumer education that we do find and drive, the competitiveness and the competition within the sector itself, issues of skills development. When we look at employment equity, that came up quite strongly also. And then obviously the diversification of value chains and opening up of opportunities for people to operate within the sector. And then also what was key is the inconsistent or lack of reliable, consistent data, you know, and this is something we've taken, you know, quite seriously. And what we've done, obviously, is that we've established the BEE Commission to work together with all other institutions within the sector so that when we talk about transformation in the sector, there's a degree of consistency and we can, you know, put to rest the arguments and the debates between all different views of what's ownership in the sector and how do we calculate and how do we get to it. But that was quite clear per the presentations we received. And then obviously the view of the DTI is that these hearings have to speak to changes to the financial services charter. It can't just go on. And although we were quite advanced in the process of developing and gazetting of the financial services charter, which is phase two of it, it is quite clear that we would have to facilitate a process where we allow the current draft to be gazetted, because obviously a lot of effort and time has been put in, but more importantly, the sector needs a guideline on how to implement transformation. But however, we put it for a 12-month period that will allow further debate and engagement so that we can inform directly the financial services charter to speak to all the main issues that we will be raising here today. So, and we said for 12 months, it will be gazetted in the next few weeks, and then it's out for a 12-month period, and then after 12 months, it'll be up for review to factor in all of these, and obviously we'll have smooth transitioning processes going forward. But I think that is critical and important in our view. So first and foremost, you know, the financial sector, obviously, as we all would note and understand, is quite unique because it really is the fuel for the economy. And the role of financial services, yes, is directly linked to the institutions and transformation of them within the different subcategories of the sector. But I think also of a key importance is the indirect role they play within the other sectors of the economy. And this is something that we'll really take note of in as far as really making amendments to the Financial Services Charter and further input. So the ownership of the sector, it can't be viewed purely from narrowly within ownership of the bank, ownership of the other instruments or entities within the asset management space and the insurance space. But however, it should be measured in terms of how the financial services is a lever that can be used to facilitate the access to finance for small and medium enterprises, and obviously the black industrialists of our economy. And that should be taken as a great opportunity to do so using this sector. Although they may not be directly suppliers to the financial services institution or entity, but we see it as an opportunity to lure off opportunities, financing opportunities provided that we could consider certain options that could translate to an ownership point or ownership recognition for the entities. And then I think also what's in key is that state institutions such as the Financial Services Board have got a significant role to play.
Sorry to interrupt. Chair, can I ask, are we going to have an opportunity to engage the board?
So I think also important is obviously the Financial Services Board and other institutions of state. You know, it is by law, as we all know, as per a law that was passed through here Parliament, that Section 10 of our Act really places responsibility on all state organs, all state institutions, to consider a level of transformation before issuing licenses, or in this case, category. Right or licenses to operate within the sector. And we feel strongly that this, the criteria of consideration of the level of transformation of these entities that receive this these licenses should entail a level of BE contribution and a level of transformation that will encompass some of the aspects that Treasury will raise, not necessarily BE codes per se. And then obviously greater focus and emphasis on the subsectors. We always knew there was a low level of transformation within other subsectors such as asset management, but I think the figures that were presented really painted a picture that we really need to target and we need to really address, and we need to partner with private and public sector to see through that we increase the number of participation within these subsectors. So, and I think also of importance is that the role that, as I said, the National Treasury is to play and the BE Commission will play in strongly monitoring performance, being that objective, that government-led and driven base by which we could ascertain and get credible information regarding the performance of the sector, and obviously this inputted by the sector themselves, but with a clear criteria, and so that we could really have a credible and reliable information consistent so that we could know how far we are really moving in terms of transformation. You know, so what's key is proposed compulsory minimum level compliance, in terms of listings on JSE. This is just rough proposals that also came up for. This is something that we are also considering to explore, just to have a greater sense of, you know, as you are a corporate citizen, as an entity operating within the economy, what's your level of compliance and really institutionalize your reflection of how you are inclusive and how you are playing a meaningful role in transformation. And we are just considering and playing with the views that have been expressed that, you know, even in as far as listing, some level of consideration in terms of the compliance. You know, so obviously such entities as the Johannesburg Stock Exchange need to clearly distinguish, between direct and indirect ownership, in institutional ownership vis-a-vis the individual people, but we feel all the individual groupings. And I think this will start to depict a clear story on the levels of ownership within the sector, and this is something that we'll be working quite, diligently on together with National Treasury and the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So, ownership must be linked to a measure, a measure based on ownership of the assets in the country. For example, in the case of the banks, it was mentioned that they do hold, close to 4 trillion assets in the country, and there needs to be a measure over time on how much those assets are really and truly effectively in the hands of, or directly into the hands of black ownership. But what we're saying with the current requirements on capital adequacy and everything, we will factor all of these. But I say there's an opportunity with other initiatives that the other financial institutions can play. We could consider in lieu of type of initiatives. You know, obviously the DTI supports this proposal from the financial services to establish a fund that would really aid and assist with the inadequate access to finance and capital that is so strongly required to drive transformation within the sector. And this is highly appreciated. But key to it is us going through the guidelines, and we have been in discussion with the Financial Services Charter, and we want to present these back here to Parliament and to our colleagues, National Treasury, so that we look at these guidelines on how much is really available. You know, on what terms will it be available, and the criteria that would be used, and we start to drive and really advocate on this part in terms of access provided by the access to finance provided by the financial institutions linked to our Black Industries program and any other key program is highlighted in terms of the policy. So it is also observed that you know obviously how far we are into democracy, there's still low levels of transformation at senior management levels, even within, as clearly indicated with the presentations from the banks themselves, you know, so, and we really need to focus in on this and look at the reasons and try and somewhat focus and have a joint, a partnership arrangement together with institutions of higher learning, together with their various associations and professional bodies, where we could have a real strong drive in improving or increasing the number of skills, but also critically is the level at which Black people are afforded opportunities, to really participate within the sector at the appropriate levels and learn by failing and really learn to participate and be really given the responsibility within the right levels of management. So, and I think... So I think also with just general amendments to the skills development element of our code, really there's an emphasis, and I think this should follow through in terms of financial services, that we should place high prioritization to that. And we believe through the current draft sector charter, it somewhat addresses that, but we believe a lot more can be done. But I think it's in the joint consideration between the Department of Labor and all other key role players in really moving towards increasing the number of skills within the sector. So, yeah, and just to also highlight, in terms of consumer education, we believe that to be important. However, we feel it should just be separated from your skills development element, and really we should, all the funds, all the resources that are available should be focusing in on key and critical skills within the sector and as far as within the entities themselves.
Okay.
Also, in terms of just general enterprise development, you'll note within the amendments we've made to the codes generally, there's a stronger emphasis on really trying to foster that big business facilitates a process by which small entities really participate within value chains. And we believe that this can be done obviously directly linked to the financial services institutions value chains, but if there's opportunities to go indirectly, it would be highly appreciated, because we've seen many a times, the difference that obviously the banks can play by merely simple things such as, working together with partners to offer guarantees, and obviously in various loans and various financial support, but also indirectly non-financial support that can really be driven by the banks given the expertise they have and the role they could play in also promoting the inclusion of diverse Black businesses within the value chain. So yes, so this will entail a real analysis of, the spending patterns of banks, so that we analyze appropriately. If it's ICT, you know, what are we doing in terms of ICT? Where do we, how do we start preparing the adequate skills? And who are the partners that we do that with? And we'll be really driving that process. So just in summary, really, that's really at the key of what we want to do. You know, so there's, you know, within this element of enterprise and supply development, really we would find that partnerships also between the institutions within financial services and the various OEMs within other sectors really is also something that is desirable and that can help us really reach the level of transformation that is required at pace. You know, so before, so I think the key thing, the next bit of the presentation really relates to our colleagues within our CCRD department. I'd like him to also have an opportunity, and I'll come back with the conclusion. Thanks.
Thanks, Lisa. Thank you very much, Chair. I think for those who might not know me, my name is Sipamanda. Surname is Kumkani. I'm from the DTI. I'm responsible for credit law and policy within the department. Chair, the we've got few responses, you know, to some of the questions that came up during the public hearing. Some of the questions were, you know, responded to during the hearing, and some of them were referred back to NCR and the DTI to come up with responses. I think amongst others were an issue around consumer financial literacy training, whether there are any sort of MOUs sort of entered into between the NCR and the CBDA, meaning the Cooperative Banks Development Agency. The NCR confirmed that there is such an MOU in place, which was concluded in 2017. And the purpose of the MOU, I mean, is to provide a framework of cooperation between the two entities. I mean, these are government institutions. They need to be working together to provide financial consumer education to members of the CBDA. I also need to re-emphasize, Chair, that besides this particular arrangement, I mean, even within the DTI, in particular CCRD, the education and awareness campaign has been elevated to sort of an annual sort of performance plan to ensure that we educate consumers. As a division, I mean, we have introduced quite a lot of pieces of legislation in the past 2-3 years. I'm quite happy to indicate that as from next month, June, we will be conducting education and awareness campaigns starting with Limpopo province, which will be followed by the KZN, KwaZulu-Natal province, so for the month of June. But for the year, for the financial year 2017-2018, this is the bigger project of the department. Of course, this will be done together with the agencies in that regard. The second one it relates to the unlocking potential for funding on tribal land. I think on this one is just to credit providers to be encouraged to partner with building material suppliers and construction companies. I mean, in the rural areas, we have the cash bills, you know, and other, you know, institutions that provide more developmental credit loans to disperse funds directly to these suppliers or introduce store card to be used solely for purchases of building material. Also, funds for working capital purposes to be channeled directly to the accredited construction companies. And the NCR has not yet made any sort of proposals to the DTI on the issue. However, we will engage and see how what is feasible and what can be done. Also, in addition to that, I mean, the DTI has reviewed the limitation on fees and interest rates, I think, which came into force last year, where the interest rates for developmental credit specifically were increased. This was to ensure that we stimulate, you know, appetite, you know, in the sector, to ensure that there's quite a lot of appetite from the banks and other financial institutions to fund, you know, the space. Because, I mean, it has always been the case that consumers are more now being given consumption loans. You know, if we can see more increase into the developmental credit space so that people can own assets, you know, can extend their houses. We know the problem of accommodation and housing in our country. So that's the space that we would like to see, you know, growing to the extent that we have tried by all means to ensure that there should be some form of appetite from the financing institutions to fund that space. Another one would be a situation where the question was came as to the credit allocated to women and historically disadvantaged persons. For now, I mean, there's no cost determination that has been sort of concluded for a new range of products for asset building. I think the idea was to produce credit for low-income consumers. The initiative will be needed or will need proximity to funding projects from hardware stores. The NCR has no information at this point in terms of the total credit allocated to women and HDPS. However, it hopes to begin to collect or to conduct a collection of such information to make that determination. So I'm sure in the next session or so, of course, depending on the length of that exercise, you know, the NCR will come up with that form of data, which will be indicative of what are the what is the credit allocated to women and HDPS. Further, the Department of Human Settlement, I mean, I think between 2014 and 2015, it has entered into an MOU with the Banking Association of South Africa, the BASA, just to enhance the banking industry's appetite for developmental credit, which, of course, talked to the very same objective of wanting to promote developmental credit as opposed to consumption credit, which has always been, I mean, a problem, I mean, in South Africa. You know, people are more into consumption loans than the developmental loans. And also a provision for low-cost housing. I'm sure there's a lot of work that is being done in that space. It's just that we don't have a data in terms of the content as well of that MOU. But I mean, the main highlights would be to ensure that there's more appetite for developmental credit as opposed to consumption loans. The same reasoning applies when we actually introduced the interest cap on fees in 2015. It was to ensure that, you know, people should acquire assets as opposed to consumption loans. There was also another question around judgments or paid-up judgments. Currently, I think the issue is it's more an awareness issue. The legislation is clear. It's a matter of maybe as a consumer you don't know where to go as in when you actually find yourself in a situation where you might have paid up your judgment. Maybe by way of a background, the judgments, any judgment that has been granted against you, it would actually stay for a period of 5 years or more in the credit bureau records, whether it's paid up or not. But when we introduced the provisions in 2014-2015, when we amended the National Credit Act, we made provision for, the automatic removal of adverse consumer credit information. And in terms of 71(a)(1)(a), the credit providers, are required to submit all the registered credit bureau information within 7 days after settlement by a consumer or any obligation under any credit agreement. And information regarding such settlement where an obligation under such a credit agreement was the subject of, a judgment debt. I think this provision is more requiring credit providers to provide a correct data to the credit bureaus. In as far as, paid up judgment is concerned, we did this because previously, if you've got a paid up judgment, you had to approach a lawyer, go to court as a consumer, pay, fees for having that judgment removed. But since the amendment, there's no such a requirement now for a consumer to contact a lawyer to have his paid-up judgment removed, in the sense that it has to be removed immediately after it has been provided to the credit bureaus within a period of, 7 days. So, but I think it's a matter of, consumers being aware of what to do as and when, So, because currently it is expected that consumers should no longer be paying any cent for to have their paid-up judgment removed. All that they can do, if it reflects on the credit bureau records, they should actually, request that information be removed. If the credit bureaus cannot remove, then they should approach the NCR to assist them in having that information removed. So we had to provide clarity in that space and to ensure that consumers are aware. And these are some of the issues that we will be taking up to the communities, as we will be on an education and awareness drive to tell consumers where they should go if they encounter certain problems, to understand the kind of products that they would be, wanting from the banks and other financial institutions. Chair, that's the end of my part of the presentation, and thank you very much.
I just wanted to ask for guidance from the committee, right? Because the idea was that we'll take both submissions at the same time and then engage with them, because really it's both responding from the side of government to parliament and the public, right? The second issue that arose is that we invited Floyd Chivambo on behalf of the EFF to speak. So the idea was he would speak first so that they can also respond to that. Now that he's come late, now let's not enter into why and all that, because the issue was raised. We are where we are. I don't know. My preference would be to have Floyd and then, DTI respond to Floyd and then Treasury. Or the alternative is we look at DTI now. I'm strongly against that. But if you want to, because it shouldn't be like a separation. You should be working together. So can I offer two options? One, let's take Floyd now, and then DTI can also respond to Floyd after Treasury does also. Well, the second option is that we leave Floyd for the end, and then the two of them and ourselves respond to Floyd. What do you want to say, Comrade Chair? There's a microphone.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson Karim. I think your first option, after all, is dealing with the same issues, and the committee would be engaging on that issue itself. That would be my preference. Thank you, Co-Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be very brief, and I'll just speak to the essence of what I think is to be done with regards to the transformation of the financial sector. I think that maybe the premise should be to make reference to Section 9.2 of the Constitution. I think it's reflected as well in page 2 of the submission that we made. So Section 9.2 of the Constitution says that equality which is guaranteed by the Constitution includes the full and equal employment, enjoyment of all rights and freedoms, and to promote the achievement of equality, legislative and other measures designed to protect or advance persons or categories of persons disadvantaged by unfair discrimination may be taken. So the Constitution places an obligation on us as legislators to legislate the measures that are designed to protect or to advance persons that were discriminated under the apartheid and colonial regimes and government. You would know that the economic exclusion of the black majority, Africans in particular, was of course a colonial reality, but also when the formalized political institutions were brought into place, it was a legislated reality that it was law that black people couldn't participate in many sectors of the economy in terms of what should happen. So first, it was illegal to participate in the stock market, it was illegal to own land in certain areas, it was illegal to conduct certain sorts of businesses. And to then imagine that we can address that without having to legislate it the other way around in an enforceable way, it's daydreaming. So that is why we propose that there should be a way of legislating economic inclusion. We must legislate, we must pass legislation that will demand that the black people should own the economy of South Africa, the sectors that exist. This pipe dream that exists, that SMMEs have got potential to ultimately become big businesses, must be dismissed. This is no longer the age globally of small companies that are given 5,000 or 1,000 or 2 million, which will ultimately become a trillion or a multi-billion rand business. So economic participation should happen through creating conditions for black people to own into existing South African businesses. And that should happen through concrete amendments of the legislations that exist to provide for black ownership of those businesses. We of course, from our side, would propose a far much bigger mark of 50-51% of black people, or even one that is reflective of the demographics of South Africa. But I'm sure we can play around the figures in terms of where we get to. But we must amend the Banks Act to say that a legal bank in South Africa, a bank in South Africa that should be legal, should have a minimum black ownership at a certain amount or at a certain rate that we could agree to. An insurance company that exists in South Africa must have a certain component of it owned by black South Africans. I think that is one of the things that must come categorically clear in terms of what should happen. And in terms of how we should deal with all the listed companies, I think we should amend the Financial Markets Act. So the Financial Markets Act is the one that licenses the stock markets in South Africa. There is only dominant one, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange now. But I understand that there has been an approval of a second one to exist in South Africa. So there should be a way of dealing with what kind of companies can be listed into the stock markets? What are the listing requirements? I know that the JSE currently has got its own model of listing requirements for all the companies that get to list on the main board and the other boards there in the stock market. Then we can then say that these are the non-negotiables for all South African companies. There must be black ownership at 50% or 30%, depending on wherever you put it. And then we should also legislate women participation in the control and management of all companies in South Africa. If you check the boards of all the major companies in South Africa, of Steinhoff, of Remgro, of Narspas, of all of those, is predominantly white males who are running the economy. You must check the board of something called the Business Leadership South Africa. It's for leadership that is of listed companies in the JSE. It's white males, because it's them who are running the companies that are listed in the JSE. The only female there is Nikki Newton, the CEO of the JSE, on the basis of her being a CEO of the JSE. Otherwise, we have a male, white-dominated economy that can only be changed through decisive legislation in terms of what should happen. And I see, Chair, just quickly, is that the DTI is saying it supports the proposal that was made by the NEF that there must be a 5 billion rand fund that is set aside for trying to achieve black economic inclusion. It's a joke. It's purely that. Let me just give a quick example that when the PIC increased its stake in Lonmin from 7% to 30%, it paid more than 5 billion rand. And then you are saying that you are going to put 5 billion rand for the inclusion of all black people into the economy. More than 50 million black people must be financed by 5 billion rand, whoever's got potential to then participate in the economy. The other example, Chair, is that when the SAB and AB InBev merged now recently, the Competition Commission had said they directed that the stake which SAB had in Distell must be sold to a B company or should be disposed of, like, so that there's competition issues addressed with them. The PIC paid 10 billion rands to acquire that stake. 26% of just one small alcohol company in South Africa. And then 23 years into democracy, there's still an imagination that we can facilitate meaningful black economic participation with 5 billion rands. And so the dream, you can do studies all over the world. The era of Apple that starts at the back office and grow into a big company is gone. We're in this age where we have to catch up far much quicker, and we can utilize legislation to catch up as soon as possible in terms of what can be achieved. So there are different ways that can be explored in terms of how you achieve black economic inclusion. So the PIC owns, as part of the things that must be given as a mandate, that is why we say that part of this discussion must include a discussion with the PIC. The PIC has got assets worth 1.8 trillion rand, shares in virtual all companies. Perhaps one of the things that must be looked into in the immediate is that in areas where the PIC is overexposed, where they've got more than 10% of the shares, they must dispose at a discounted rate to black people. That can then lead to meaningful participation. But also the PIC must begin to, in all the companies where it has got shares, it must deploy black people to go and sit in the boards of those companies. The PIC has got interest in virtually all companies that exist in South Africa. Like, on average, they're the single biggest shareholder in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, but they are just a passive investor who throws money and receives dividends without actual participation. So it can then facilitate proper, sustainable, and durable entry of black people into mainstream economic participation. So those are the overarching issues that we're dealing with. And then part of the things that is contained in the document that we submitted is to say that let's have set aside laws as well, that if we're going to give 10 banking licenses, there must be a principle that 4 out of the 10 or 5 out of the 10 should necessarily be given to black-owned, wholly owned companies. That should apply to asset managers, that should apply to insurance companies, so that we then realize meaningful economic participation. The last issue that we want to speak to, the second last, is the issue of asset management. Asset management is basically companies that manage monies that belong to pension funds. And majority of the pension funds is black people. There's 8.9 trillion rands that is being managed by different asset management South African companies. And black companies that are playing in that space are only managing about 400 billion, which is 5% of the entire assets under management. The rest are managed by huge corporations, and it's concentrated. Like five companies possibly manage more than half of all assets under management in South Africa. There must be legislation that gives clear directive in terms of making sure that black asset managers participate in that particular space. The last issue, Chair, is conduct issues, which I think are overarching. You mentioned some of it yesterday in the debate or the budget vote of National Treasury, of as to when do banks dispossess people's cars and houses. You pay for 4 years of a 5 year loan, and then you default for 3 months, and then they take the whole car. You pay for 22 years on a 25 year house loan. You default for 3 months, they take the whole house, and then they go and put it in the market on a value that is maximal. And then where is the moral legitimacy of that? I think those are some of the substantial conduct issues that we should deal with, and we must curtail them as soon as possible. That there must be a principle that the banks must be willing to take a risk, that if a person has paid more than 50% of their loan and they objectively cannot continue to pay, the bank must be strong in terms of what should happen. Those are some of the issues that we deal with, and the document is proposing must be looked into as part of the thoroughgoing transformation of the financial sector. And there must never be an argument that we can't legislate black ownership in the economy. When the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act was passed, there were attempts of some right-wing forces that went to the Constitutional Court, I think, to challenge that there is 26% prescribed black ownership or historically disadvantaged individuals' ownership. And they lost because Section 9(2) of the Constitution says that we should legislate to include those that were excluded under the previous regime. That is the submission, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Members first, and then we'll have responses from Treasury and DTI. Yes, Tandi, please.
Chair, thank you. Let me first start with Floyd, because the laziness for him to produce a document that will give suggestions, I'm disappointed, because I'm the one who suggested that he make a presentation. I thought Floyd was going to come with something different from what people are doing. I'm very, very disappointed. Let me go to the issues that he has raised and show you where my disappointment lies. One, I thought, first let me make this example. You see, when the apartheid state sent people to hang pan, you can't say redressing that, you must do the same. That doesn't solve a problem. All right? And I'm going to make examples why I go that direction. You see, after the Second World War, there were countries that, when they were rebuilding their economies, governments pumped money in corporations to participate, especially in the agricultural sector. The limitation of that was to hamstring the ability and the potential of companies to diversify products and act on their own and be able to sustain. Government had to put set of rules, protection rules, and my chair from trade industry knows what I'm talking about. That's why the EU had to protect certain industries, because there was no creativity in those companies to be able to participate and compete on their own. Leave that. I'm not going there. Where I agree with Floyd is that there should be a concerted effort to allow black people to participate. And it's our responsibility. We can't dodge it. And I'll come to why I'll relate this to the presentations that has been made. The suggestion that I believe that Floyd is raising a very good point. One, I thought he was going to speak about the hedge fund market, which he's not talking about. Where we say people are not there in that market and they need to participate. Presentations were made here when he was not here because Wolof. So he misses important discussions with this pattern of not attending very important discussions. That we must come with a proposal that says there should be a certain percentage of people who participate in the hedge market. Because people were saying they are not given licenses and they are not given reasons why they cannot participate. That should be unlocked. It's an issue of building an asset base, no question about it. The second one, he challenges the 5 billion. As if he's not an economist who must understand the performance of the economy in the current conjunction. It should be incremental. The proposition that should be saying is that this must be incremental from 5 billion going upward. In the immediate, what do you put there? Because you can't just preach here when the budget is not there. Where is it going to come from? Are you going to steal it? No, you can't. Secondly, let me juxtapose with what the NCR is saying. You see, you can't say to the banks, those are private entities, you can't say to them, we want to take your money and put it in the pool. You go to them. And that's where I'm going to do it here because at least Rob is not seeing me. You see, Rob is afraid of business. And I used to say to him, go to these people, talk to them, they can put something. Comrade Mlambo Mnuka used to do it, used to, you know, smile with them and they will put something through the Adgisa program. Now, if we don't say to banks, assist us, I've met banks, you will remember that in the DTI. They said we'll take 40% risk, you take 60% risk. But that could not be concretized because I left before the process. That thing must not be lost. You must be able to go back to the banks and say, give us that 40%, we'll put our 60%, we're building the black industrialism. That's where you start, Floyd. Now, let me look at what the NCR is doing. Actually, I'm sorry, Pamela, there's a point that I'm disappointed that the NCR gives you to respond to. That doesn't belong to CCRD. You see, the issue of credit allocation and the issue of developmental loans is an issue that the NCR must negotiate. You are not doing anything for us, and I'm very worried. It's got nothing to do with this unit, it's CCRD, because it makes the laws. You go and engage the credit, you are the credit regulator, you go and engage people in the credit market and say, we want you, for us to be able to facilitate economic participation, to give women credit for developmental loans specifically, not necessarily for housing loans. And in relation to the tribal land, you guys did a shoddy work. You see here, we're saying the majority of people in South Africa live in rural areas, right? They've developed their properties. They don't want to develop. They already developed their properties. But they cannot use that as a collateral to be able to get funding for any reason they want that for. Not necessarily for purchasing cars and so on, but to get involved in business. They can't. Because that properties are on tribal land. There's only a regulation of government that can unlock that potential. If you engage the commercial banks and say, can you please consider people and evaluate? In fact, the municipalities in those rural areas must make valuation of those properties, not under valuation that is being done in the township property as it is in the current conjuncture. I can make an example, a personal anecdote, where my property is evaluated to be worth less than half a million rent when I know it's more than a million rent. You can imagine in the rural areas. That's the challenge. Those are people who can be able to start agricultural projects, start their own cooperative banks and do business. But they can't because they don't hold the collateral. And you in government financial development agencies, you are not able to give all the necessary funding that is needed because of the limitation of the funds you hold. You see, Chair, we must come back to this issue. This one, we cannot leave it to lie there. I know I'm putting more meetings and more meetings, but
We should put timeframes on when we would get feedback from the DTI, the NCR in particular, saying we met these four banks. This is the agreement that we have reached on this one. And we have appointed government valuators that municipalities will utilize to valuate the land and put it in a commercial environment where people can start doing business. Because we as government can't do what Fred wants us to do. We can't fund each and every project that's there in the rural areas, in the township, because there is limited funds. And we can't pin down private institutions to demand from them to fund them. They've got their own principles. The law allows them. You will not win it anyway. Floyd, a good issue of conduct. Let's pursue it. On the issue of amending the Banks Act, can you please provide specific clauses that you want us to amend? That's why I'm saying laziness. He did go and sit there and doesn't come with what we need to deal with. Can you please those, bring those proposals, because then we do it here. Once we're still here anyway. Let me see whether have I covered the ground. Consumer education. Spamand, your unit. Your unit. You can't be saying that today. We said these things long time. Go to the masses. Go to the masses, speak as a Sotho, as a Zulu, as Xhosa, but understand that what do you mean about this resentment. This legislation on resentment has been taken more than 2 years ago, but the implementation of it is still being abused by people who go to courts and make judgments without people even knowing, and people are being intimidated to pay. It's still happening. I can tell you about an example of an account that belonged to my sister who I'm being made, they are saying I must pay it, I don't even know it, you know. They're still intimidating, because still they take chances, because they take advantage of that clause that says if a person acknowledges the debt, and you know acknowledgement of debt can take form in different shapes and forms. Once you say I remember that account, that's acknowledgement of debt, technically and legally speaking, right? So can you deal with those issues? Chair, I don't want to take time because other members might want to speak on issues. I'm now in the action mode. I don't want us to be speaking to these issues. I've been speaking to these issues for a very long time. I want to see how do we move forward. One, we get the amendment from, it's two amendments actually. The Financial Markets Act, the Banks Act, he brings it, we discuss it, we see what needs to be changed. Two, is there other issues? No, you speak about the insurance one when you deal with that. So don't take the advantage of the situation now. And then so in six, well, let's just... Well, after 6 months, six months more, then we do these things as quick as we can. Yeah. Okay, let me leave it at that.
Thanks for not taking time off the committee. Who's next? Ah, Brendan.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Sorry, first to DTI, they note that they're going to have discussions with the JC. My only concern there is whatever their discussions are, they're speaking about the specific level of accreditation, which is fine. But whatever they do, they can't mess with the ability of a shareholder to sell their shares. So the reality is that companies have no control over their shareholders selling their shares, and we don't want to get to a situation where black shareholders aren't allowed to sell their shares, because that would be contrary to the purpose of empowering people. So whatever they do, don't mess with that concept. Then regarding the other submission, I think we need a lot more details. Okay, so for the EFF to specifically say, you know, for instance, the register, there's two sites, existing companies and new registrations of insurers or banks. For new one, the whole concept, let's say you start off as a wholly owned black insurance company. Now you want to grow. You need more capital. They're not allowed to take money from who. So define who they're allowed to take money from, because pension companies are apparently white. Foreigners are apparently white. So who can they get money from to grow? So they must be a little bit more specific about that type of thing going forward, so that everybody knows what they're actually planning. And secondly, if they want to radically change the existing shareholding structures, well, where are we going to get the money from to pay off 50% of the banks? Foreign shareholders, you know, and how are we going to do this without sending a message that send this country's currency even into more free fall, because we don't want foreign investment. Because if we don't have foreign investment, then you're not going to get any banks or any insurers. And we're not going to go develop POS where we are at this moment. We won't build any future infrastructure, etc. So they must be very specific as to how they want to make this a reality. It's easy to say, wholly owned black company, but you know, what does that mean? It means you're limiting the size of that company forever. There will never be more than a cooperative bank. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jay. I wasn't aware we were asking questions to DTI, but let me... There was a view during the hearings...
Responding to Floyd, but you know Tandy is Tandy, right? Tandy is...
I can hold back if you like.
Don't you want to raise anything? Look, basically we asked each party... let me explain before people misunderstand. We said each party can come with their positions, right? Now, only one party that came with a written text is actually Floyd's EFF, right? Now, the idea is to engage with Floyd's text. Secondly, nothing stops any other party from getting an opportunity to speak for 10, 15 minutes. Our own position, just to remind you, next Tuesday is a joint study group, our comrades are here. Wednesday we will come with our submission, right? And we'll search it. We want only on 5 minutes just to table it and then give it to the secretaries, the researchers to look at. Now, coming back to you, don't you want to respond? It's important to hear what the DA thinks. We hear what Brandon's saying, but it's not clear whether he represents the party view or his own view, but it's useful what he does say. Do you want to say anything, Mr. Mania? You don't have a view on the... Okay, well, we'll come to that. Anything else on Floyd Chivambu? Comrade
Chair? Yes, no, thank you very much. I must say one did find it very informative, and one appreciated the reference to the housing, to the assets, the few assets that sometimes people can get access to. It's long overdue that we address that, and I think the point that you made in 20% being paid off, 40% being paid off, and then just repossessed and sold for tuppence, as it were, and still owing. I think if one is going to repossess, as it were, within the legal system, one would then want to say, then you owe nothing. We've taken your house back. If you take something back, you take it with the debt, the liability incurred. It's one of the rare occasions where something is taken back and you'd say, I won't take the liabilities. That's almost contrary to Roman Dutch law, which regrettably is still the foundation in South Africa. But there it is. The other thing that is this Insolvency Act. It truly is a problem, and we need to unpack this more. I don't recall hearing too much about that, and that is so directly linked to the Credit Act itself, and yet it falls under justice, not even under yourselves, the finance. And again, the moment something falls under justice, the perception is that the sanction will be on the not on the perpetrator, but in fact on the victim per se, and that's exactly what happens here. So I think that one would have liked to have heard more about the Insolvency Act and get out. This is a Dickensian piece of a clause. It is not a democratic one at all, our current democracy. The other issues is ownership. One does have a problem here, given the Constitution itself, which talks of ownership, and we may need to look at that. Because the reality is that, yes, ownership is allowed regardless of race, you see, or historical dispossession. So how do you correct within the current constitution the patterns of ownership? Do you do it by saying you have to hold on to shares for X number of years? Or are you then obliged to sell to someone in the same sort of gender or race? How do we address that without conflicting with the current constitution? And I don't have an immediate response, but one would like to address that particular one. But I think what comes close to that is the principle of set-asides. I don't think that this has been explored sufficiently. And this would be an ideal mechanism to address some of these constitutionally close issues that are difficult to overcome. I thank you, Chair.
Firstly, Floyd, when you were here last time, which prompted us to call you again to speak to your views, you, I thought, said that 40% of all banks should be black-owned, right? You gave the figure 40%. I think partly today you're not giving a figure. Maybe, I don't know, I'm speculating, right? Like, because you want to, like, keep the ANC open to the idea, and then we can negotiate the percentages. But it would be useful also, because we will have to look at this motivation, and we will have to discuss it, and we'll come back within 2 weeks or so. But I would like members to think about this. I'm just facilitating. I'm not taking a position because I don't have a mandate. That we do seriously think about some sort of percentage beyond just in a charter. Right? The question that I would like, because we're going to ask DTI now and Treasury to reply, if it can be done for the banks, for the mining sector in law, why can't it be done for the banks? Because historically the banks and the mining sector have got this fusion almost. Right? We talk about the finance, minerals, energy complex and all. So I don't see why we can't do it. I think we'll have to negotiate percentages. In our report, we don't have to. We can propose, say, that the executive considers, say, 40% or 30%. That's be reviewed over time to be increased. So I'll give you a chance to reply in a moment, Momo. So I would like members to think about it. I'd like the ANC in particular to explain why it would, as the ANC, not be in some or other sense agreeable to a percentage, right? While saying that, I also think, look, Floyd, the EFF, very sensibly, in the view of a lot of us, last year said, we don't like this minister necessarily, Gordhan at the time, we don't like the budget, but given the looming threat and very serious one of a downgrade, we will support the budget. As you said once, I saw you on a panel, I think the day after the budget speaking, and you said on TV, you said, no, something like this, it has to be in this way, I suppose. You said, typically, yes, well, we're fine with the minister now, but we'll box him later down the road, right? So that when the balance of forces changes, when there's no looming downgrade, we will then say, no, to hell with your budget and to hell with you, minister. So I'm just extrapolating, right? Now, the situation here, Floyd, similarly here, given the perilous state of the economy, given the desperation for investment, given how jittery people are, whom we need desperately, right? Foreign and domestic investors. We need to find some sort of balance between putting in these provisions in law and actually doing nothing. The second issue that might arise is to go back to the banks and haul them in here and say, all right, here's the draft report. This is what we're proposing. Tell us how, if we don't put it in law, you will still deliver on it. And how will this happen? Because it hasn't happened until now. The point Floyd and others make in the public sector hearings is, hey, these charters don't work because, firstly, nobody really monitors them. And that's an abysmal thing that's happened, right? How Medlac and others, to be fair, including the political parties, just forgot this thing after a few years, right? Then look at the capacity. You know, Zakaria, I would like to urge that in some form you do something. That what is striking, actually, in this public hearing, is how all these statutory bodies come here and plead with us, you know. We are powerless, we are helpless, help us, we need more money. They're not doing their job, even with the limits. So it's the thing that's very, very starkly clear. If the banks are not doing their job, frankly, even more is the state failing to do so. And Parliament also, we must not like focus on the BEE commissions and on the NEF and on the NCR and the cooperative development. What about us? So I think in our report was self-critical. Parliament, meaning us from 2014 in this committee and those before us. So I don't think we should shrug away from our failures also. So in short, the state, which means Parliament, the executive, the officials, and all other institutions of the state have failed. So in short, what I want to know, Floyd, can't we think of some deal that we strike, right? There are two issues. Can we, when we decide to put figures, take into account like a transitional thing, or B, that, you know, we need investment, how do we calm the investors down? Then two is, if there isn't the majority view that we put in figures, then I don't think we should settle just for charter objectives. There has to be something in the charter that says, if we don't achieve this target, not the executive must consider, the executive is obliged to introduce targets within 2 years. So we put some, so there are various possibilities. The third thing that's striking me, because I'm thinking on my feet, I really don't know what you should do. If the balance of forces were different, if our economy was growing at 3 to 4%, it's much easier to say these things, right? But maybe what we do is, I don't know whether we can do this, Comrade Chair, let's think about it. We do a report, but it seems like as an interim report, and a year from now we give it more flesh. So in other words, we have a transitional program between, let's say, June, third week this year. I hope this thing can be processed by June. Because remember, we promised and fairly to everybody who participated, we're going to give them a week to comment on the draft report, right? We'll tell them no more than 1,000 words. Others will get reams. You know, reams and reams of paper, people rehashing what they said. And Zakele, Antonio, Margo, and the two chairs will be, like, staggering under the weight of that. So what I'm saying, comrades and colleagues, I would really like us to think about what EFF is saying. Never mind who it comes from, and never mind that they will go to the 2019 elections if they get it and say, it's okay, that's politics, right? But I like this idea of going beyond the charter. I like this idea of putting it into, Comrade Chair, into the law. But at the same time, let's take account of the balance of forces, to put it crudely. So having said that, can we have Treasury, because it falls more under your sector, and then DTI, respond to Mr. Shivambu's input?
Chair, we also have a presentation.
Yeah, I know, but
okay.
Yes.
Yes.
So that it doesn't get lost.
Yes. No. No. Sure.
Because he's the only party that's come here with
confidence. Yes. Yes. No. Chair, I think, you know, members are asking the right questions, because I think there's no doubt that, you know, whatever we mean by transformation, if we look at ownership or management, that, you know, the progress has been appalling, and that something needs to be done. But I think in looking at it, it's important to say what will actually work to change that, and how much do you think we can change? Because there's no point doing anything. I mean, and, you know, I look at something like, I think one of the first lessons I learned coming into government, but just because we said that there shall be free education or education for all at school level, we now know 20 years, not even 20 years, even after 5 years, we've seen that we hardly achieve that objective, and our schooling system is in a crisis still. And frankly, one could even stretch it, that the biggest move to get transformation is to get the school education system right, okay? But I'm just giving an example. Here's an important thing. Everybody will agree. Yet, we seem incapable to really confront the real issues which are blocking us from at least getting people to be decently educated, okay? So when you get to looking at, I mean, and so I learned very early on that just because you legislate doesn't mean that you're going to achieve what you want to achieve. That, yeah, sure, that doesn't mean you don't legislate, but you need to do much, much more. And I think, coming back to the ownership issue, the reality in the South African economy is that we are a capital-poor economy. We don't have enough capital. We don't have enough capital because, firstly, we don't save enough. So we are reliant on foreign capital. To the extent that we're reliant on foreign capital, we could say tomorrow, foreign capital, reduce your share. You know, many companies would love to re-domicile. We've been told tighten exchange controls, but then you have to loosen exchange controls. We get applications for companies to re-domicile. One of the perverse outcomes of the BEE discussion is that we are almost encouraging companies to leave South Africa.
It doesn't lead to that conclusion, but to say that capital must leave. Now that means no growth, or we're lowering growth, we're not going to get jobs. I would have thought the discussion in South Africa is, how can we get all the capital that's already here to work better? How can we get more capital to come in or to be made available? Yes, it would be great to get South Africans to save more so that we get our own capital and we're less reliant on outside capital. But to the extent that we are reliant on capital, I think it's important to keep in mind that you don't want to do something and then exactly what you fear happens. Let me give you an example of the mining charter. I would argue that precisely because it's legislated, actually it's not worked, because it ignores the fundamental reality that if you're going to list any major mining company, there isn't enough capital. Not even white people have enough capital in South Africa for that. What happens is, typically, and I mean, we've been doing quite a lot of research on the ownership patterns, and that's why we're excited to put forward the ownership monitor, is that a company could be on the JSE, just under 40% of your companies are foreign-owned. And for some, if you can take Barclays, it was 60, they've reduced it now to 50, but it could even go up to 70-80% for some companies. So we are heavily reliant on foreign capital. Now, over and above that, your institutional investors, domestic, take up another 30%, say, on average. So you're looking at the direct share in the economy. It's very small. It's 20-30%. It varies by company. So when we say you want black ownership, frankly, even the BEE codes, the black ownership is so heavily geared. I tell you, it's not even the 6 or 10%. It may be 2% if you might, or 1% if you take out the underlying debt that's there. And that's because the model that we've had for BEE is a terrible model. I don't know why we tolerate such models, because I would argue there's almost a tick box approach. We pretend ownership is happening, but actually it's not happening. So, Chair, I don't have answers. I'm just saying this economy needs capital. Whether we put percentages or not, we are so reliant. And by the way, it's not a South African phenomenon. Most investors today are institutional investors. And that's where you spend time. You know, I think one of our CEOs, I'll even name him, Stephen Kosseff, says, you know, I founded Investec. I think he says, I don't know what the percentage is, 0.7% or 7 or 1%. I don't know what the percentage is. But he says, I spend more of my time going on roadshows, talking to my investors and keeping my investors happy. Okay. And that's the thing. So if you want investment in this economy, I don't believe that measures like putting percentages, and I'm not saying anyone suggesting the Venezuela option or nationalization. Some of us come from that kind of background where we thought there were easy solutions to these things. They haven't worked. They haven't worked. Yes, so you use one's brain and say it doesn't work. So the issue is, let's at least be... I'm saying, let's at least, whatever options we have, let's at least analyze to make sure that it will work. Otherwise, we're all pretending to transform. You know, in the banks, what we say, what's the term, Unati? They pretend to, in a Basel thing, it was, you pretend that they've got enough capital. Pretend and extend, yes. I'm saying it would be, and I think what this committee has done, or this joint committee, I think just the fact that you have these discussions, and in fact if you have them every year, I think they are a powerful, powerful factor in shaping thinking. And I think the other thing about transformation is you need all the parties at the table. Government can say we want this, Treasury can say this, but the others, they won't oppose you. They won't even, the big companies may not even oppose you head on. But it's when that mining license
is not given that someone will challenge the constitutionality of an act even 5 years ago. Because there's an implicit thing that in giving the license, there's an ownership right. Okay. Then you will see challenges come and will be stuck in court. But worse than that, the people who actually have capital vote with their feet and leave. And I've said, if you want us to start, for example, under our exchange control system, there are lots of applications to re-domicile. Should we now open the tap so that people go? And that was the issue of Anglo-American. Why did Anglo-American have such a big share in the South African economy? Why is it was in almost every sector? Because capital couldn't go under apartheid. So it got stuck here, and they actually increased the share of ownership in everything, which led to the concentration that we have and so on. Now, so I think our response is not to shut down the discussion. We're saying let's have the discussion, but let's not think that there are easy solutions. And just because there aren't easy solutions, it doesn't mean that therefore we can't do anything now. So you know, I think one can go on to the other issues. I mean, let me take boards, okay? And let's de-South Africanize it. Most financial companies are dominated by white males, not just here. It's overseas. Go to the USA, go to the UK, look at your top FT, your top 100 in the FT index, okay? They don't have enough women. So there's a whole issue of how do you get enough women and do you legislate it or not, okay? Some countries in Scandinavia do legislate it, but I think the Scandinavian countries anyway tend to be more progressive and gender issues are taken up much more strongly. So they tend to have better representation. If you go in the UK, women representation on boards has been stuck, okay? Now, is legislation going to help you get better board representation or not, okay? So I'm just saying these are difficult issues. They're not just issues for us in South Africa. We might have other elements that may come in, but the methods to be used, I would say the best way is still to get what you succeeded. CEOs came here, get the charter working, because if you don't have the charter, you'll have another table, another charter, whatever it may be. And you've got to get buy-in from the captains of industry. And if you don't have all the labor on the table, all of those sitting and talking and understanding what's possible and understanding what resistance you'll get from different sides, I think we will make less progress. To the extent that we can get consensus, I think it would be better. And I think that this process has started that off, and I don't think we should rush to... I agree with Honorable Chibambu's... I think that he's asking the right questions, but I don't think those solutions will work, personally. And I think there's enough to show that it won't work, and we can certainly research those issues. And that doesn't mean that we're saying, therefore, we can't do anything. I think that what we're going to suggest, and you'll see in our presentation, is how do we take this matter forward as a process, and then monitor every year firstly, let's get the vision, and then let's see what progress we actually make. And once you move away from elements like ownership, there are many elements, as we've heard with the insurance industry, how they procure, do they use small businesses, on all of these factors, I think we need more information. The reality is today, even the figures on ownership, it's sometimes it's, the fact that we as government haven't got one set of figures. We should be having a set of figures. But if you don't have those figures, how do you figure out where we are and what progress we're going to make? And that's why you've got different figures, because there's different methodologies being used. And many of them are legitimate methodologies. So I'm saying we think that there are concrete steps, and we'll outline it in our presentation, that we can do and that can actually get us back on the road to serious transformation.
I think I'm out of our time also. It's 11:34. Firstly, Momo, I think it's reasonable to say that the majority of us here and those that
significant number in the public hearing are clear that the financial services charter, although it helped, is just not helpful now. Secondly, there is, amongst the MPs here, the majority of us don't believe that having another charter is going to be enough. Now, obviously, you will say, well, let's do this. Let's have quarterly meetings with you. Let's strengthen the oversight bodies in the state, the statutory bodies, the DTI. Yeah, right? But as parliamentarians, we're here for about 6-7 months of the year, a million things to do. That's not good enough. So you see, I think we must listen to what you say as a way forward. I don't think we're going to disagree that there must be a process, not just goals, right? But really, Momo, between what Floyd is saying and what you're saying, is the least, I think, that will be acceptable. Well, I hope will be somewhere in between is the least that we would accept. But I hope that the committee as a majority will seriously consider what Floyd is proposing. We might quibble about the figures, but we be a bit more nuanced about it, have it as a transitional thing and so on. At the very least, we have to say that if certain goals are not achieved within 18 months, the executive is required to implement legislation to that effect. Yes. Nothing stops this committee of bringing a private member's motion if we had to. I think the committees have reached a stage where we feel we can't trust the executive fully, really, to do the things that it should be doing. And some of us have been part of that executive, right? So I'm including myself and with due respect to any other former ministers here. We're all part of this thing. The thing is, Momo, you're a political activist. You also know that we have to weigh the you talk about trade-offs. But there's also a trade-off between financial sector transformation and a social explosion, as some of us call it.
Yeah.
So we're saying, Momo, with due respect to you, we hear you. Well, I'll speak for myself. I hear you. I'm not convinced by you, right? But I'm not also convinced entirely by Floyd. I think some way in between is the very least we should do. Very least, really. Now, for example, I'm not saying you should respond now, my brother, but you say here, in red, but you don't say what DTI's views, presumably you haven't spoken to your minister and deputy minister. It says here in red, for example, the proposal from the BBC that all new banking or insurance licenses must be 51% black-owned can be implemented within the ambit of Section 10. I don't recall you commented on that. If you care to, you can, or you can say, look, you'll come back to us. So in short, can you do a quick reply, and then we have to tie this up because we have to give you a chance to reply. Floyd, the issues are now the issues of the committee. There are no more EFF issues, right? But you will get a chance to reply in fairness. I'm just saying, let's not make it an EFF issue after you reply. It's now the issues of the committee. So fine, can you reply, then it's Floyd, and then we have to move on.
Thank you. Just directly responding to comments from Floyd, which are very critical. So in as far as ownership and replying to what the chair alluded to, you know, I think what's important is to also take stock of some of the legislative instruments that we've passed in Parliament and obviously review their effectiveness. Because some of the issues that Floyd is raising are already legislated. So in as far as, for example, you know, so Section 10 of the Act, which was facilitated by Chairperson Fabs, it does speak to, it used to have a way reasonably possible where you could factor in some of the issues that, Mo has raised, but now that the law has been amended to say it must consider a level of BEE compliance. So, and that level of compliance is inclusive of another requirement that if you fail to meet a specific sub-minimum in terms of value created in black hands, your whole scoring in terms of that level is reduced. You know, and it was a careful balance that, you know, Parliament has considered to trying to impose a level of ownership and considering some or the other realities, but that is currently now law and it's legislated that if you fail to meet a sub minimum of ownership in terms of net value, so meaning ownership value minus debt and ultimately what is the true value that's in the hands of black persons. So, and I think that is legislated, and I think it's
we need to be discussing and reflecting on those. So, and I think also just to balance it out, Mo is raising very critical points. There's really no capital, and that's the main issue. But in as far as a compromise, we've reached a point to say it must be at least in the financial services for now a 10% direct ownership. We do not want to accept some of the, you know, the challenges that we face, but we say let's have it at a bare minimum, which is, I know Floyd would argue it's very minimal, but it's something that is already there, where it's a strict requirement. But I think significant to what you are raising, Floyd, is the issue of the PIC and their role. Now, this is very critical because what we've given, you know, certain institutions such as the PIC is a BE facilitator status. So we've identified there's lack of capital available. We've identified that people will fail to obviously raise the adequate capital to buy into some of these institutions, into these businesses and entities. And we've afforded institutions such as the NEF, IDC, the PIC, and there's many others that are coming, a status of transformation and their responsibility. So what we do is that wherever they obviously buy into equity, that is deemed as black, but in as far as they are affording an opportunity for black people to be the buyers of that equity ultimately over time. And I think that, you know, that also includes the deployment of board members, as you had highlighted, in as far as women participation. You know, as they own the right to that instrument, they have the right to deploy, and they are currently doing so within the various entities that they own. But I think the careful thing is that I think we need to reflect on some of the as options, as those be facilitator status options, and look at a number that we could, you know, really look at and really interrogate further and see how we could ideally scale up. But all of this said is just little measures or an attempt to ensure there's equal ownership within the economy, but underpinning it is what Mo has raised. There is obviously not sufficient capital to drive that strongly. Thanks.
Floyd.
Thank you very much, Chair. So the broad principle I understand of these black economic empowerment charters was to create an environment of what is the legitimate level of empowerment, like, but not legally binding. Okay. That is how it was just encouraging people that what is a legitimate, what is the morally acceptable levels of compliance for you to be an empowered company. That is why it's not compulsory and there's no consequences for companies that do not comply with such charter. And there are no, there is no instruments legislatively that says that this will be the consequence. And then we're now arguing that let's elevate transformation into legal instruments, into basic licensing conditions to say that to be a legal bank in South Africa, a certain component of you must be owned by black people, must be owned and controlled by women as well. I think that is what we are trying to argue, that if you leave it loose-ended in the manner in which it is now, the reality is that 40 years post-1994, you will still be remaining with the same crisis which we have now of a racially skewed economy in terms of ownership and control. So there must be some interventions in terms of what should happen and all of those things. I don't know what is the department is saying about. Do you know, if you do a thorough study of all the countries that industrialized and developed post-World War II, none of them heavily relied on foreign direct investment. They actually, some of them sought to substitute foreign direct investment. So an orthodox perspective that suggests that, you know, we rely on foreign direct investment for us to achieve our goals, it's outdated. I mean, I think even mainstream economists have disputed that. Maybe you went to school during the orthodox times, and there was a dominant and only logic of economics. That is the only way of, and there's a lot of rethought. There's lots of rethinking, and even the reinterpretation of history in terms of how the late industrialists got to catch up. And all other industries that ascribe to that subscribes that notion that you need FDI for you to develop stayed at virtually the same income levels for more than 50 years. Every country which ascribed to that notion of no, FDI is the be-all and end-all of economic theory and development, they don't develop. But the ones like South Korea, like Japan, who understood that you do not need General Motors to come and build cars in Japan. You need to build Toyota, even when it failed over a period of 30 years. But when it ultimately got to pick up, Toyota is the biggest supplier of cars in the world today. Because they were patient with it, they understood the essence of having to invest in their own capital and give it direction. So this notion that we should completely rely on foreign investment and foreign capital and everything else, it's what has to be discontinued. It's the very thing that has to be disrupted in terms of what should happen. I don't think that Honorable Tobias is representing the notion of what he say is arguing of absolute reliance on foreign direct investment is what has to be disrupted. There's enough capital in South Africa. There is enough capital in South Africa and pension funds which is being passively invested in useless activities which can be redirected into developmental investments and add meaningful value. The PIC only, the Government Employees Pension Fund has got 1.8 trillion. It's in useless passive investments which even if they pull out, those companies will not collapse. Like they've got investments in Steinhoff and Pick and Pay and all of these other institutions which they can pull out and redirect to other useful investments and still add value in terms of what
should be.
I've added that. I wanted to come to what the Honorable Tobias is saying, that I don't think that, you know, when I was working for the Communist Party and when I was in the ANC Youth League, the Communist Party I worked for 2-3 years and then Youth League for 5 years. I sat in the Economic Transformation Commission. I don't think that what Honorable Tobias, with due respect, is saying represents the ANC. Like, she's on the right of the ANC, this is far much righter in terms of those are some of the issues that, but I think that some of her contentions and disagreements are based on the fact that we might have circulated the document late, because for instance, when we give an example on what should be changed, we give on page 4 and 5 what exactly, which sections must be changed in the insurance bill and how they should read. And if we go into the banks bill, the same pattern, that is what we try to explain, that section 22 of the insurance bill must be changed to read in this particular format. And I don't think that the ANC is averse to that. Like, it has never been. Like, if you read the Mafikeng resolutions and the Polokwane and Deben NGC and all of those things, it's one of the things that, but we understand that some of the issues is just a conceptual limitation that defines the member. So not saying anything about hedge funds doesn't mean that when we then drive the transformation agenda, we should expand that to that particular level. We were speaking about all financial institutions, that there must be a legally acceptable degree of black and women ownership and participation. Lastly, Chair, is that maybe these examples will help, that you can have the 5 billion for enterprise development, it's little, right? But there is a lot of resources that can be redirected in the existing system to have meaningful black economic ownership. PIC owns a property company called Pareto. It sold 24% to a black economic consortium for 4 billion rands. And people would be able, could easily get money from the private capital markets and own that, with the principle that they're going to be locked in there. They must not just get the shares and then when they think that they are maturing and then they sell off and then the company is no longer black empowered. They are locked in there. And then the principle is that when they dispose that stake of Pareto of 24%, they must dispose to other black economic role players. That is what happens with Exaro. That is what did not happen with APSA, because when Tokyo Zivalo was in ownership of a stake of APSA, he disposed to white investors and then it then reduced the amount of black ownership within APSA. So there can be a revolving principle that, okay, you can get and be empowered there, and then later on, when you dispose to black economic...
Very quickly,
I think that is the key principles that we must ring first, and avoid being sensational in the manner in which Honorable Tobias is being.
I can't in 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair, for giving me an opportunity. You see, yesterday he ran away when I was going to respond, because I was going to educate I was going to educate him the same way I educated him in the youth league.
Yeah.
You see, demagogy is very dangerous in society. Because some of the assumptions that Floyd made, even including the PIC, he's not even aware that all the funds that he's talking about are already invested. But I don't want to go there. I don't want to be a demagogue. Yesterday, I quoted a paper written by the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation when people were discussing non-racialism going up and down exactly the same way, insulting others, calling them that their thinking is outdated when we've got solutions to provide. And I said there was laziness on his behalf not to come with suggestions, concrete suggestions, but to make statements. He just made statements. That document's got nothing. I said, go back, bring us clauses that must change, make proposals. There's no proposals, there's nothing new. The issues of the conduct we have discussed it when he was not there, we resolved. Nothing new. I want Floyd, and I'm still going to educate him, it's my role, you see that? I can't react to him. I want him to understand that our role here is not to point fingers at each other, but to come with solutions on a difficult and complex matter that colonization has created. Colonization has created a situation where empowerment was only for the few. They are the majority who are at the bottom end. We must provide solutions. And part of solutions is to include those who benefited before, because they are the captains of industry. They are holding the monopoly. To negotiate with them and us to be able to achieve that is to put what we have. Government must be able to say, this is how much we have, and we mobilize them. And I was crude. I said, Robert the communist doesn't know how to smile to these people. Some of them made commitments in his absentia, you see. They said we are willing, but you know, we can only go this far. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to do what he's doing. He must bring those suggestions. He ran away. Still today he brings nothing. That's fine, Chair. I will not be angry. I'll be patient with Floyd until... I think slow. That's what he said when he couldn't hear. It's because I'm older than him. That's why I'm slow. So we'll wait. I'll wait for those suggestions. Thanks, Chair.
Tactically finessed enough. You're annoying a powerful member of the study group. All right, look, on a more serious note, I think we will take seriously what you're saying. Some of the proposals you've got, with due respect, I think can be considered, really. They're straightforward. I really think you're right about the role of the PIC, but I also accept what Tandy's saying and so on. So I really think some of them are not really things that the ANC wouldn't agree with. Others we need to discuss, and we'll come back in 2 weeks' time. We have asked committee members, different political parties, to send their proposals such as they have. It's recommendations mainly we want, not so much an overview and analysis, to the committee researchers, right? Margot and Zakele and Antonia. I don't see Margot yet today. Is she here? Oh, right. Okay. Fine. So we're running out of time because we really have to have this report done, ideally by the middle of June, and let's see if we can progress it expeditiously after that. Momo, your overall input to the hearings?
Okay. Can you do it in 30 minutes?
Yeah. Okay.
You can switch the press button. I'm asking Bukhile to press button so he can justify his trip to Cape Town. Okay, Chair. Thanks, Bukhile. If you can just start. Chair, I think just to make the obvious points, I think we just want to thank the committees. I think these discussions. Yeah. Okay. So let me move on. I'll get to the get back. To make us. So, Chair, today we're just going to make some preliminary suggestions, because I think what we're saying is that these are obviously hard questions, and I don't think Treasury alone can certainly come up with a solution, or government by itself. And to get to the last point, that I think transformation requires the participation of all interest groups and stakeholders, engaging and be committed to transformation. And I guess that's still going to be our key message. Move on. So I want to make the point, even in the Treasury, we've not had a discussion. I haven't had a discussion with the Minister, so I can't say this is a mandated position. And we certainly need time to do that, to get into the specifics. And as I said, we need all key players to buy in. I think the role of the Financial Sector Summit and Financial Sector Charter Council Chairs is therefore critical. Because the issue is not that the current charter doesn't work and therefore let's change it. Even if we get rid of it, even if we don't call it a charter, we're going to still need to come together and have some document. And certainly, if you look at the financial sector charter today, its membership, I think, is too limited. On the one hand, you need to make sure everyone who's there has some skin in the game. On the other hand, if you look at the hearings, there clearly were many people who don't even know about the financial sector charter, yet they are active participants. Therefore, I think for us today, this is just an issue of how some ideas on how can we take this process forward. I think, let me say, you know, on all issues, we can take the ownership issue and we can raise all the complexities. And to do so by itself, it just can be a deliberate strategy not to do anything, okay? And so I think in raising the complexities, it's not to delay action. I think some action is certainly possible more immediately. Others, certainly we need to sweat a bit more, but we can get there if we are committed to it. Move on. So, Chair, I just thought I'll just put up the slide of firstly before the hearings what some of the thinking in the Treasury was. This was certainly produced in the budget speech where we talked about the minister at the time talked about a new perspective on economic transformation. He said the litmus test of our programs must be what they do to create jobs, eliminate poverty, and narrow the inequality gap. I think the key point, that transformation must be mass-based and sustainable. Chair, I won't go through all the points, but this was said. And I want to make the point that when people have come the hearings to make representation, you know, sometimes a lot is said. There are some statements that Chair, were sweeping statements. People say, we tried this with our license, blah, blah, blah. I promise you, the regulators say, the same person who came here, there's these issues, but obviously these issues are confidential and we can't raise it. And that's why we said to people, there are specific issues, because it's a bit difficult. Everyone who comes is arguing for themselves. When we are here in Parliament, we're trying to look at the broad public interest. We're trying to hear what's the underlying complaint, because it clearly means that there's a problem, and we need to fix the problem in some way. So to the extent that when you deal with specific licensing complaints, I think we can find a process, and that's why I invited people, please come and talk to the regulators, and with their permission, they can invite the Treasury just to talk on the broader issues, and we can look at how, if there are abuses from any regulators or some structural impediments, how can you fix that up? And that's why we do want them to come, because it's only when you meet people and see the problem that you can identify the problem and begin on the road to resolving it. Move on, sorry.
Chair, I think this is, again, what we had said, that certainly it's important to be clear, and I'm not saying we're not clear, but to be very specific about what elements of transformation we want. I think broadly the issue has been a de-racialized financial sector. We need to look at ownership management that's more reflective of black South Africans. We need to look at enterprise development and procurement of services, the issue of access and inclusion of black households, and effective usage of financial services, because we pointed out one of the first successes were Zanzi accounts, but many of them were not active. So, you know, there are issues. You want an effective usage. We want to promote asset wealth of black households and other households, and provide better access to funding for small businesses. There's also developmental and competitive objectives that we want, funding of infrastructure. But ultimately, I think we do want more higher growth and obviously inclusive growth and more jobs in the economy. I think to ensure that the impact of transformation is truly transformative is something that we need to look at. In other words, we want a financial sector that works for all South Africans, all sectors, helping South Africans to save, borrow, insure, transact, and generate jobs and asset wealth. Move on. Okay. And I think we accept that certainly the financial sector is, in a sense, when there are, where I think there's always gripes about the financial sector in the same way as I think there will always be gripes about the cell phone providers, okay? There's also few companies, and people get frustrated because when you have few companies, there is a certain arrogance that develops in such companies called monopolistic power. And so, you know, how do you actually deal with that? But, you know, you get frustrated with one company on your cell phone, you go to the other, and after a while you'll have the same problem there. But how do you deal with these? I think are there mechanisms to resolve problems that come out? And that's why we've been quite excited about the Twin Peaks system, because I would say one of the most transformative mechanisms that we have is the creation of a market conduct regulator to focus on consumer protection issues. So if there are issues like banks evicting people when there's a small debt, that's clearly totally unacceptable. The regulator can play a role to prevent such problems. Okay. At the moment people come, you moan about the problem, but the problems don't get solved. And that for me is the biggest problem of all, is that problems don't get solved. And so the issue really is, how do you and I think that in a new system, we need to make sure it will work as we intend, that these issues do come out. And let me say, even on the issues of evictions and homes being sold, so we've gone into this mechanism. We met with some of the leadership in the SACP who took up this issue with us. And, you know, in looking at it, you realize this structure, you know, a lot of the banks on one hand claimed that they were getting out of that space. The whole issue of how the sheriff industry is regulated and who are the sheriffs and collusion that takes place there. So, you know, we don't see it as a financial sector. You think sheriffs is about just taking people's property, whatever. That's actually a form of financial activity if you look at it, and it underlies and drives some of the behavior. So I'm saying that in all of these issues, once you go into it, you realize that you are touching on all kinds of bad practices that are there, and you need other departments also to get in to resolve those problems. But certainly, I think with the market conduct thing, we can make sure that, say, banks behave much better, but that won't necessarily solve the problem, because it's like a waterbed. It will then go, not that I've ever slept in a waterbed, but if you pop it here, it will pop up somewhere else, okay? Move on. Chair, I think what we do want to say is clearly the financial sector charter is broken and needs to be fixed. But I would also argue so are the BEE codes, as I've said. And we do need to look at the system in a more holistic way. If you look at the financial sector charter, I think we made the point in our first presentation that it has been, as someone there used the words, juniorized. Nobody important in an important position or up senior management tends to attend these meetings after the breakdown in 2008, because it's really largely become a tick box exercise. If you remember, up to that point, you had, in fact, the CEO used to be Enoch Godongwana himself. Okay, so you really had people who had a lot of weight, which is not to suggest the current people don't have that weight, but you clearly had people who you know enjoyed respect and enough that senior people would actually attend those meetings. And I think we clearly need to at least get back to where we were, however we do it. I think when in looking, and I've talked already about the BE code, so I won't do it, but what's clear from these discussions is when we have targets, the targets are too high level. And when people have come, if you're a short-term insurer, if you're a panel beater, you need targets to see how do short-term insurance for motor car insurance, how is that defined so that it actually reflects the kind of targets that make sense to people in those industries, and that small players have been used. I mean, it's absurd if we're not using panel beaters in every township, okay, just because they don't meet some standard. More work needs to be done by the industry to bring people up to standard. Obviously, if it's your car, you want to make sure it's fixed up by someone who's fixing it up properly. So these things come in. What's the right of the customer? Because the industry itself has a particular reputation that if they tow your car, you never get your car back. You're told where to take it. So there's a bit of what we need to see. And, Chair, I must say this. You know, we were going to meet with the industry on Thursday. And sadly, one of the people with the Short-Term Insurance Association, Leila Munda, passed away. And the meeting had to be cancelled. She's been at these meetings. And I thought I should just bring this to your attention.
She's attending the hearing.
She's been, yes.
Oh, no, then we must write a letter of condolence to her family. So, Tibor, can you, Zakila, can you assist with this meeting?
Okay. So, needless to say, that meeting also did not take place then. So I think, Chair, the financial sector summit does offer an opportunity to get the charter back onto the road. But I think the important point we would like to make, it's probably too late to have it this year, because we're not talking about a once-off meeting. I think that there needs to be a process where the short-term insurers are meeting, perhaps as a subgroup, and it feeds into what's going to be at the summit. And we've had discussions with some of the players in NEDLAC now to try and see if there can't be a focus on the process, because that's probably going to be more important if we really want to get the outcome we want. Chair, I won't go into this, just you know, quite a few slides on how it started, just for your info. There was a lot of excitement around it. I was glad to see from our colleagues from TTI that they are saying, let's get the current charter gazetted because there is a hole, but at the same time, let's work towards a better charter that actually reflects the sorts of targets that many players expect. You can move the next 2-3 slides, I don't think. Chair, I think, Kathy, you want to go through this? It's your table. I mean, Chair, we're coming now to what we've tried to do to assist is to come to the hearings in a moment, because we have got a summary, but there were a few gaps which we will complete by when? We had hoped by today. In the next day or two. We have a matrix. Yeah, so we've got a draft.
it's amazing. Just to show you, what did each player actually say, so we can compare across. I think. Okay.
And so all our researchers, as they begin to put it together.
Sorry. So it's what people said in their submissions, okay? Yeah. So, Chair, I think we're just trying to show you in terms of the charter, or not just the charter, these were major sort of BE transactions that took place of the major banks. And, of course, all of these, I think, lasted 5 years and came to an end. And many of your shareholders, black shareholders, then obviously sold their shares. And the point I think we've been making is a lot of these are based on effectively a loan that underlies that. So they do have to pay back the loan once they take ownership or to get ownership of their share or the benefits of their share. This is not just a financial sector issue. It happens with all PE deals and gets to the heart of the once empowered, always empowered issue. And the importance of that is that shareholders feel that, look, they've given up their share for this, and you can't expect them to do this all the time. Now, that's the debate that one needs. It does, by the way, particularly with foreign investors, and I know what Honorable Shivambu is saying, but I think it's not that we like to be dependent on foreign flows. We're forced to be dependent on foreign flows. And it really does affect the flows that come in. And, Chair, I want to make the point. In South Africa, Unati, there are what? 4 or 5 banks, if you look hard enough, that are looking for new owners. There's no new owners coming, even from overseas. If anything, Barclays is selling. Okay. You've got Old Mutual Group and NetBank and that relationship. Okay. You've got smaller banks. People are not rushing to buy, even from overseas. One is a problem of the post-2008 crisis. So it's not like there's a shortage of people who want to sell. The problem is they aren't buyers. Who's got the capital to actually buy the share? And I think, Chair, I want to make the point too. There's a lot of resort to saying PIC funds, pension funds. When we've been looking at retirement reform, Chair, every time there's a statement that PIC is buying this asset, we as public servants, we immediately receive WhatsApp messages, okay? Where people say, what's government doing with our pension funds? It's not government's money, okay? And our worry is that it gets to the point where people come and ask us, shall we cash out, okay, when we resign? Shall we resign? It actually sparks those fears. And I think that we really need to be very careful when we say, pension funds, this is what you're going to do with those funds. It reinforces the notion that people don't actually trust government with their pension funds. The only people who don't say it is us. Okay, but I tell you, the messages that go around are viral and they're real. And we've seen...
The person in this committee really helps that cause.
So I think even when you get to those issues, and I think that the issue here really is there are trustees, they're supposed to play a role, and more I think this is coming to the fore in the retirement industry. Move on. So, Chair, just to come back to the issue.
You know, we normally, as a courtesy, welcome people who are from outside this country. We have Oliver Matheson, young Oliver Matheson at the far end, though he's related to me, yes. But the fact is he's from England, although he's got a South African connection, so welcome. And please behave, right? He'll be upset if you all are rude to me. No, it's not my son. It's a relative, but it's my son, I wouldn't say it. No, then I wouldn't be just nepotistic. He's South African, half South African. But he's a visitor, and please behave in front of the overseas visitors.
And don't be rude to the chair.
Okay, Chair. This, we're just bringing back an old slide to again just show the various sizes of banking, of pension funds, etc. Pension funds do, the assets do make up 110% of GDP, which is almost as big as banking. But we'll leave these figures. We've shown these to you before. Move on. We can move on as well. This is also previous things. We just thought we'd just remind members. Can move. Okay, Chair. Then we get to the comments. And I don't know, Kathy, if you want to go through it, or Mr. Seho and Jonathan here as well. But just to sum up what, the way we've summed up what people have said.
Just with the members' forbearance, right? I don't think you should rush through this, because we really want to hear what you have to say. Because for some of us at least, the technical information you have is crucial in shaping our recommendations, right? And really, we can respond here, but we're meeting you next week, and you know, you're coming in with the Financial Sector Transformation Bill and so on. I mean, Twin Peaks Bill next week and so on. So we will have time. There'll be slots there. So I would suggest, unless members feel otherwise, tell us precisely what your responses are and why, so that we can help also Zakele and Margot in absentia and with Antonio to also like listen to what people are saying and shape it.
So we come to that at the end of what we are proposing, but do you want us to go through just what was said to remind members?
Okay, thank you, Chair. So just in terms of the structure of the presentation, what we've concentrated on first are the main theme of the comments, and we've tried to theme them, because that then, what we've noticed is that there are a lot of overlapping issues, some which are similar, and that's important for us when we're thinking about a policy response, that we respond to the broad theme as opposed to just particular elements of that theme. Also, there are cross-cutting elements. So we've discussed in the main themes of the comments, and then in our responses, we've put those into buckets as well to try and capture the various elements. So the first main issue which came up, as has been discussed a lot today, is the quality of the chart and the codes, and the point being made that it's dysfunctional, it's not working, and while a lot of progress had been made, the intended outcomes of the initial summit of the summit which was the prelude to the codes has not been delivered on, and there were particular elements that were raised, especially around the ownership. Again, it's been a big issue today, as well as the principle of once empowered, all empowered, and that was seen to actually compromise the quality of the codes. I think the issue which emerges on the once empowered, always empowered is also not only the principle itself, but what that means in terms of how it's reflecting the data. Because then what you see when you're looking at the data is an ownership of 10, 12, 15, 20%, whereas in actual fact, when you look at the current ownership figures, it might be less than 5. Mm-hmm. So without even, there's the issue of the principle versus how we use the data to look at the current situation. The issue that how do the industry codes relate to the generic codes, and again particularly around ownership, where what the view was in fact, or one of the views, so for example of the commission, the BBEE commission, it's a lot to get that out, is that the intention is that the sector code should set higher standards, shouldn't be compromising on the standards. Again, one of the issues raised today is around voluntary, that in fact it's one thing to have the standard or the target, but what happens if those targets are not met? And I think there's been an over-reliance on the government procurement, because for many industries they're not reliant on that, and so what? And so what do we do? A strong feature that came through, also discussed today, was around asset managers, given the role that they play in the allocation of capital. The data question comes up consistently. And this is important for at least two reasons. One is the policy decision making, that we rely on data to make sure that the interventions we propose are going to meet the problems as we've identified. And if we don't have the data right, well, it's obvious our decision making is going to be compromised. And then, of course, the ability of the Commission to effectively oversee observance with the targets as well. If we're getting mixed information coming through and based on or different quality of information, it's very difficult for us to consistently measure progress. The summit was emphasized a lot, that we need another summit, was already being proposed through the NEDLAC process. And the intention being that we need to refocus, re-harness attention on how to take it forward. The second main issue is on, particularly with respect to the targets, that there are on the ownership, management control, and procurement, that the targets are, we're not seeing enough being done. So I think the general comment was there's not enough being done generally, but there's not enough being done in particular on ownership, management control, and procurement. Capital markets also being raised in terms of the listed company and ownership there. On the procurement, we've already spoken about the insurance, so for example, the procurement within the financial institutions and the support of small business. What we've done in the next couple of slides is a snapshot of just reflecting. This isn't, and to be clear, this isn't our data, so MoMA has spoken about the ownership monitor, and so Treasury is looking to develop a consistent measurement and publication of ownership data and with transparent measurement and the likes. This is not it. This is what the industry has said. And looking at ownership, management, control, procurement, we focused on those because of those being the high-level issues. And I think without going into, the intention here is not to go into the detail. I think the issue is that even when we were looking at how this information was presented to us, there was different language used, be it economic interest, ownership. There's questions about how this has been calculated. I've already spoken about if you've had a BEE transaction, that transaction has now, people have sold out of the transaction, that's not reflected in the data. So I think that although we can, basically what we're saying is I don't think we can rely hugely on this data, and we need everything that's presented here in order for us to be making the right decisions. We need to be getting the right data for ownership, management, control, procurement in a systematic way and on an ongoing basis. I think if we can move forward to the JSE. So what the JSE had focused on is looking at the difference between foreign, they highlighted the foreign interest and therefore the free float that's available in South Africa. The free float meaning the proportion of shares after foreign, but also shares which aren't individually owned or aren't off-blocked. And they're looking at non-black versus black ownership. They show that black ownership is, in fact, higher than non-black ownership. I think even it's very hard to cite the JSE, not because we think the data is not reliable, but I think if we're not coming off common agreement about what we mean when we talk about ownership of South African shares, it's going to be very difficult to have a discussion about what the appropriate policy intervention should be. And I think if Honourable Member Shivambu was to look at this data, he would probably not agree with it or think that we need to make policy decisions on a different basis. And I think at the very least, we have to start with the data and getting the data right and coming off a common platform so that we can jointly find a solution going forward. The third main theme then, or third main area, is that South Africa needs more black industrialists and more black SMEs. And the underpinning this is the observation that enterprise development in general is not sufficiently supported. Challenges highlighted include barriers to entry, cumbersome regulation, and empowerment financing, all issues that the DTI, or some issues that the DTI have touched on today. Barriers, the high barriers to entry being regulation and capital costs, the regulation talking partly about entrance, there could be high capital charges, but it's also about once you are a supervised entity, there is a lot of regulation that you are subject to. So for example, if you are an FSP, if you're an advisor in the insurance sector, one of the challenges raised in the hearings was around the education, the requirements relating to fit and proper and education requirements, and are those preventing particularly older black sales persons from continuing to participate in the industry. Poor communication of licenses we've already touched on today. I think we can move on. Insufficient access to capital for new or growing businesses. The point was made by the Commission that if there is a shortage of capital, this then also does provide a breeding ground for fronting. Insufficient access to markets that are related to the financial sector. This relates to market structure issues, high concentration, vertically integrated, and that means that a number of industry participants are not seeing the growth and not seeing the representation within the sector. Again, has been covered today, black asset management, asset managers, asset consultants, actuaries was also raised with there were representation made from black actuaries. And lastly on that was the role of the developmental agencies, and that was what was a particular theme around the cooperatives, is that there's inadequate support for the cooperatives and the role of the CB and the lack of the CBDA in doing so. The fourth mainstream then is on the market, of the structure of the market. And here, talking about high concentration, there was a number of references to the Old Boys Club and what it would, how to break down those barriers. And it was also not just the concentration on a horizontal level, but also vertical integration issues. So along the value chain, so product providers being related to the intermediaries, being related to the asset consultants, being related to the asset management, all in large financial groups, and that, what that means in terms of breaking down those barriers for new businesses. So the importance then was emphasized around creating, well, what we do needs to support competition, create competition, support financial inclusion, and build the financial sector. I think what was also, what came out through the comments was the nuance about, and this relates to the capital discussion, it's not just about redistributing what we already have. So it's not just about handing over shares within the existing structures, it's how can we create the right developmental platform that we can support new, growing, innovative, vigorous businesses. But with the intention, and this was where he pointed, to deliver on black-owned bank, state-owned bank, more effective cooperative banks. A lot of conversation, a lot of dialogue happened around cooperative financial institutions and the role of these. In particular, it was highlighted that these were not getting the support that they needed. And looking at the number of registered CFIs having declined over time, high regulatory burden, no access to the payment system, these were raised as issues that were seen as impediments to the development of the sector. The main comments, or bucket, the next main comment bucket related to poor market conduct practices. Again, these are what we've been touching on today, the likes of the dispossessions. But it wasn't just on the credit side. There were a lot of various issues raised, for example, on the where you've been contributing to your insurance policy, and that then you get retrenched, you can't continue paying, you don't get paid out. The abuse of the court system we've been speaking about today as well. And then I think importantly that the right kind of credit supports the transformative effects of the financial sector. And this is the point that has been raised by the DTI and others, the MCR, that the developmental loans and the importance of those developmental loans and how do we actually shift from consumption-driven to supporting investment. And that's actually the flip side of the savings story as well, that we're needing to promote those savings and generate that capital. And the way in which that happens is by, if you are going to borrow, rather be borrowing to finance assets, because that's going to grow in future. And I think it's very important that we connect all these threads because they are related. And then lastly, other issues raised related to fintech and opportunities created by fintech in terms of innovative companies being able to leverage off the financial technological advancements, that these can be startups, they can be disruptors. It's an opportunity again for new players to enter, and that is as much about developing then new wealth, new assets, as well as promoting competition. Capital allocation is skewed. This relates then to, again, asset consultants, the role of critical players within the financial system. I think often we focus on the ones we see and we know all the time, which would be the likes of a bank, but there are these intermediaries in between who are playing these really important functions and should not be overlooked. And then a proposal was made to develop a financial service commission the point here was that there's too much power in the hands of large financial institutions and that we need something to balance that and to replace the ombuds system. And I should, of course, highlight that these were the issues as they've been raised in the over the hearings. We don't necessarily we agree with a lot of them, but we don't necessarily agree with all of them. We agree with in principle, but we think there might be other solutions in order to address. And that's what we then move on to in terms of our proposal.
Okay. So, Chair, so in response, I think, to the hearings, we're just just coming up with some ideas. I think certainly on ownership, I won't repeat these points because I said them earlier. The whole issue of the quality of the data, the fact that you need to differentiate between foreign institutional and direct ownership. We could actually come and do a presentation on ownership, if you like, in the economy, because we've had, as I've said, we've actually even got some draft papers that we maybe we should release it sooner rather than later. So we just see where we're at.
Arrange for colleagues and comrades to think about this. So it's worrying me a bit, right? You keep saying we're going to come back. Tani says we need another discussion. Now, I got an SMS from a colleague who also says let's not rush into things, right? I think all of that is fine. But you see, we've been putting enormous pressure on Zakhele. I've been doing it on your behalf, comrades, Chair. Zakhele and Antonia, about delivering the draft next week and so on. So can members think that before we part at 1 o'clock, we have to be clear about what exactly we're going to do. At the very least, what I was hoping was that we would have a report that's a draft adopted by the committee and sent off to the stakeholders. But whether we go and debate it in the House, that can be done in August. You see, on the other hand, let me also say, people are waiting on this report. And they're going to feel, we came here and we heard all these things and these guys are taking so long. So, Ken, that's a very important thing. Because I'm noting, and I'm sure the co-chair, the other things we have to do. So find a balance between getting some draft out and a final report, maybe slightly later, but hey, by the third term of this year, we must have taken it through the House and everything. We can't keep saying that it's complex, it's difficult, we have to make the right choices, it could have enormous consequences for the economy and so on. Well, that will drive us to inertia.
Yeah.
Right. So having said that, your deal with process matters. I'm a bit worried about time. We haven't asked any questions.
Yeah. So, Chair, we can at least
give you... Tell me about the process issues.
No, Chair,
if you listen to the things that I'm going to say, they're going to relate to process.
All right, process, please. Very quickly.
Because I'm going to make suggestions if they work. And I want you to listen to me. You see, process, let's start with data, Casey. Now that we don't have data, and this process can drag. Remember when you're dealing with data, people can say this is what we have, and you say this is not true, and then they need justification. Can we have a subcommittee that can, share, not us, we can't do it. A subcommittee amongst yourselves, either the JSC and other sectors, to give us data.
I was moving in a similar direction, but go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, Chair. Some person is like, I'm not so intelligent. And then we come to the issue of the summit. I'm all about summit. Summits happen all the time. I was going to say let them have a NETLEC technical committee that's going to set targets. The ownership monitor can then come in out of that. It will have drawn strength from those targets that will have been set there. Because there we'll have a team of experts. It will not be just us saying you put this percentage and that quote, and they will be able to say from here to here this is how much you can put as targets, and then the report back, then it comes. So much as you want to take the report by August, it's fine, it looks nice, but I want us to look at the...
Moving in the same direction.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the formulation of the of that committee, of the monitor, I'm not sure whether it's going to be you alone or who else is going to be there. Because it's a
can,
point of
can
interest.
I, can I finish?
We're going in the same direction, right? Okay. Right. So as for today, what I want to suggest is, look, we have to have some questions at least. You may not finish your submission. Let's carry it over to next week. So what I'm suggesting is there some way you can truncate to the next 5 minutes?
Yes.
So at least now people can reply. We won't finish the submission. We leave it to you to manage the next 5 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Then we'll have about 20 minutes for a reply.
So, Chair, just on ownership, I'm saying we can very quickly just give for everyone just the numbers we have, so, and others can then comment on it. Move on. I think, Chair, again, we just wanted to make...
To chair another meeting, so she's going to be part
of it. Okay. I think the point we're going to make is multinationals dominate the South African and other economies. But let's move on from the ownership. I think we've talked enough today on the ownership issues. I think, Chair, I do think that one of our big suggestions is that as we look at the codes, I do think we need to look at the BE codes, because part of the problem there is the whole issue, and as Ms. Fabs leaves, I think the issue of equity equivalence, because multinationals are coming and saying that it's one thing what the codes say, that they could have an equivalent, but in practice we don't have it. And multinationals, of course, as you know, like to say we own our company fully. So how do you actually deal with it? Because remember, the sort of sanction there is in the BE codes is that you can't actually then sell to government. So one of the major companies said, look, on the one hand you subsidize the motor car industry, on the other hand, if we don't qualify on ownership, it means we can't sell cars to the government, okay? So we have to export the cars that are here. So there's issues like that that needs to be sorted out, I think, in the codes, okay? And the other last point I would make is we've got to recognize the indirect share owners of retirement funds. To water them down continually, I think, is wrong, okay? But that's, I think, some of the urgent issues we would see with the codes. I think, in looking at transformation, we are also looking at issues of how to improve net wealth, the customer's perspective, small businesses, the issue of, gender or participation of women. Men is not as much of a problem at all. Move on. So when we get to the recommendations, I think the first issue then is we've got a few thoughts on how to reform the financial sector charter. That certainly that would be the right forum to start looking at the data and to make them comparable within the sector. There's a whole issue of the targets and how they can be defined and made much tougher. Certainly, for example, for asset management and asset consultants, there's the issue of getting the CEOs back into the process to guide the process. These are things I think that we can certainly do with now within the Financial Sector Charter Council, just to improve things. And I think members have mentioned, and lots of submissions, what are the consequences when there's targets are not met, or you know, are there any other consequences, and how do you ensure there's effective monitoring? So that's the one area. Move on. The I won't deal into this because we've had a lot of issues here that's been raised. The data issues we've talked about, that's a no-brainer just to do. Move on. I think the issue of promoting black industrialists and black-owned SMEs through an explicit developmental framework by the sector is something that needs to be looked at. I think the issue of how do we get more banks with different ownership profiles, there is the Postbank currently being looked at by the Reserve Bank, but I think the issue is how do you get new entrants. There is a problem that a lot of these new entrants is very hard to compete with the existing big players. So, you know, we can talk co-ops and dedicated banks, but we might still be playing marbles on the side, okay, compared to what's the real action that's happening. There's an issue of black insurance owners, certainly the brokers. There are issues that come up with intermediaries and so on that we need to look at, and we are looking at, but from a customer perspective, I think what's the paper, the retail RDR distribution review, something perhaps worth talking about. Asset management and asset consultants clearly, I think, needs transformation the most, and of course the way companies procure. Move on. I think we're talking about certainly then better access to more affordable funding. I think the suggestion of insisting that the JSE puts that as a condition can actually be self-defeating when you want capital to come in. But are there other effective ways of dealing with this? And I should add that part of this, I think, would be also then to clarify perhaps the role of the PIC and other pension funds so that we move away from, I think, the other fears that get generated. We've talked about, just from the suggestion, we can really look at the CBDA and what it does. And bear in mind, the CBDA is a body that largely, after the Twin Peaks Bill goes through, is going to focus on just building capacity. And can we look at, in a licensing system, a more tiered entry process that focuses on getting smaller players into the system? Then there's the issue of co-ops, issues about getting people into the payment system. And let me say, Chair, there are issues here of the safety of the system versus access. And perhaps we need to just really look at the balance that there is currently. Can we perhaps open things up a bit more, but at the same time not lead to problems where the system gets infected? Because that really would create big problems. I think lastly, of course, is the good conduct practices, financial inclusion, the usual stuff we come and say. And that we do need to accelerate financial inclusion. And I think the whole area of fintech, and your computer's died now, sort of is quite an exciting one. So those were just the initial ideas from the suggestions that we could see for how to take forward. Thank you, Chair.
Quickly. One is that we need 5 minutes as the Finance Committee to look at the program, right? So maybe we could spill over. I was asking the members who prepared to stay till 10 past 1. Or even 5 past 1, right? So we try to finish at 1. We got 18 minutes, right? Questions, please.
Remember, this is part of it's the first phase of an ongoing exchange with Treasury. Yes, Floyd.
Thanks, Che. Do you know the? I know that the department says that they've not briefed, they've not spoken to the minister, the new minister. I'm interested in I think that National Treasury must give us a consolidated view on the transformation of the financial sector. So the ministry must say something, because yesterday the minister said that National Treasury will support the...
How many people got their hands up so I can work out the number of minutes? Right, 1, 2, 3. Piki, won't you say something, otherwise people will think you're toothless. Oh, no tea taken out. Okay, right, 4. Right, there's 4 of you. We've got 18 minutes. Each of you gets about 3 minutes. 4 minutes. So
3 minutes, yeah. 3 minutes. Here we are. So yesterday the minister said that the National Treasury will support the parliamentary process in developing a comprehensive plan that sees our financial sector fully reflect South Africa's demographics. So I think that the department should consolidate its perspectives and views with the ministry. I would suggest, Chair, that perhaps before we even consolidate this perspective, we should get the ministry to come and make its own input in terms of some of the issues. Because transformation is a political question, more than a much more technical, departmental issue and everything else there. Because some of the commitments which the political leadership could make can be made by the departmental component. So I think that much more fair that we get a consolidated perspective, because I'm beginning to sense a nuance of what the ministry and what the department says. We can point that to that. And that disjuncture is not necessary. Like, it can be dealt with by asking the ministry to come with a consolidated perspective. Of course, to have consulted the department so that we know what is the political view, ma'am. You're speaking about radical economic transformation. You can be dismissive of it, but let's listen to it. Let's listen to a consolidated perspective in terms of what happens. But I don't know who should do this, but we need to get, as the Standing Committee on Finance, a consolidated presentation on who owns and controls capital in South Africa, particularly in the financial sector. Because there's contradictory information and data that is coming from all the people who came to make presentations here. Everyone who comes, they present for the convenience of the argument that they want to make in terms of the ownership levels and extent. We need an autonomous presentation. I don't know who would do that. Either we can say the parliamentary budget office, but it's responsible for something else. I don't think that the internal research will help us. Maybe we can constitute a team, a technical team that will consolidate once and for all.
You've got 20 seconds left.
Yes, once and for all, common and fair, above board data, not embedded data of people who want to make rational arguments, so that all of us are guided. Because so that when we say we want to put a 30% target, we know where are we moving from. If we want to put a 70% target, where are we moving from? Currently, the data that is there about ownership and control is extremely dissimilar and contradictory. So we need common data. Sure.
Yeah. Okay, Derek.
I'm not even going to try to say everything that I wanted to say, and we'll leave it for another occasion. But just what we've got here, I mean, you've got the Treasury and DTI responding to the hearings and putting forward some proposals. You've got Floyd, who has come up with, I think, some proposals that warrant, as you said, Chair, warrant some serious thought. I think we need to just work out then how are we going to do it and who's going to be doing what in order to take out of Boyd's proposals and some of the proposals from Treasury, the things that we want to take forward and in what way do we want to take it forward. I'm still sort of coming to terms and settling down to change of role from executive to legislature, which is primarily about overseeing the people that are meant to be doing the doing and meant to be bringing legislation to us and spending the money that we agree to, etc. And then we're meant to be passing legislation. Sometimes there is a bit of a fine line between, you know, simply overseeing whether they're doing what they're meant to be doing and being proactive yourself as a committee, and we must just strike that balance well. But I do think that there's stuff here that warrants some serious policy debate. If you're looking at the financial sector, us as Treasury Committee or Finance Committee, probably the single most important policy issue that confronts us is this transformation of the sector. I mean, we have all sorts of budgets to approve on APPs and strategic plans and all sorts of things that we have to do. But at the heart of it is the regulation of the financial sector. What kind of financial sector, to do what, to benefit whom, participation of whom, how do you achieve it? I think those are the big policy questions that we confront. I obviously have a lot of thoughts on this, but just a quick one on the proposals from Treasury. You speak about the Charter Council. Of course, the Charter Council is there to ensure that there's compliance with the BE. You've already said that the BE Act has its own flaws. Now we need to identify, I believe, what are those shortcomings, and say, what do we want to change? What's the mischief? What problems do we have with the BE Act as it is currently? You start there. Then you have, sector codes. Then you have a Charter Council. Now you said at some point, Momo, that the Sector Council is juniorized. Well, the Sector Council, if I'm not mistaken, is appointed by the Minister. Yeah, okay, certainly in the case of tourism, it is. And, I recently, some time ago, I used to be the Minister of Tourism, and I appointed a new Sector Council, Charter Council. But I gave them a clear mandate, in addition to simple compliance, and to say you've got X number of months to report on what are the transformation measures that are necessary, realistically, to have some major impact on the tourism sector, which is also untransformed, as the financial sector is. But, this sector council can't just sit there and do what it's like. If it's juniorized, then address that problem. If it's there, a body of people there that are taking their time and effort to do something, how do you get best value out of them? So in addition now, I've got 20 seconds left, in addition to...
3 minutes 28.
Oh, I thought you said that, 4 minutes in total.
Five.
Okay. Obviously, we need to know more about why have you made this comment that it's juniorized? What do we expect out of the council? Can we get better value out of the council amongst the many things that we have to attend to? I'd rather leave it at that, Chairperson, otherwise I'm going to start getting onto other dimensions. No, it's not a problem. We'll have time to engage on the other. But let me just say, in essence, I do think, again, I think Floyd has given it a nice shot, an opening shot, and I think we need to engage on it. It's his party position. Normally, a party would develop party policies, and the party in government would implement those policies. Parliament, with all parties represented, would oversee the effective implementation of those policies. That's normal. We're sitting with a little bit of an abnormal situation, where even when Floyd proposes state ownership in various institutions, Floyd himself doesn't have that kind of confidence in the state as it is at the moment. Would you agree, Floyd? That, ESCOM and SAA and SABC and, we can go on. At the moment, there isn't the public confidence in the state to play that kind of role. So simple state ownership isn't the transformation that we seek. Simple state ownership is sometimes problematic rather than, an advantage. And I think we need to be honest about that. But for now, I think let's welcome this as an opening shot. Thank you.
All right, Tandy.
No, sir.
I'm not asking a question. The issue of the Financial Service Commission, can you guide us whether we need to take the new suggested approach, or we should stick with the ombudsperson? Can we have an argument that can hold so that we see what we deal with this issue? And then the CBDA issue, you remember how many times it came up. I suggest a meeting, not with Arche. They give us something back about how far they, because you remember all those issues that related to, especially the Limpopo guys were raising those issues. Let's take them there. Can you also get the data from the actuaries that made the presentation and the towing, what do they call it?
Yeah.
Remember they owe us data too.
Yes.
Well, now that's what. I'm banking my minutes for next week. Thank you, Danny. Chair, I think
all
you apologize for me. I'm still numb, so you
still
may
numb.
Not. Yeah.
Okay.
But, Chair, just two or three things. I think Momo said it, that the minister is not yet appraised. And in our first engagement with the minister, you remember me and you raised and made him aware of the lessons that we learned through this process of the transformation of the financial sector, and that he must be very close to that process. So I will agree that the sooner that meeting takes place, Momo, the better for us, because there are certain things that must be driven politically, and we would want that to take place, so that even when we engage in the next round, the minister is able to lead that process and be able to deal with that. But Chair, I must also appreciate, and I know I've missed quite a number of engagements, you know, this whole issue of how we took the process between the DTI Standing Portfolio Committee and SCOF, and how Treasury and the DTI were working on this process. It has assisted a lot. And there's a lot of synergy, and the right hand and the left hand speak to each other. It has been a very useful process, and I think somebody next to me says I must thank her for suggesting this. I think it has been very helpful, because even beyond this engagement, I think, Momo, as you draw closer to the overall or consolidated recommendations that you think must come to us, your sharing of information and engagement with DTI should still continue, so that by the time it comes here, you have synergized on most of the things that you think you needed to do. And I think I'm basing that also on the fact that I'm mindful of what you have said, that the summit was coordinated, and unfortunately, is that the lady who passed on? Is that who passed on? The person who passed on was the one who was leading the process of the summit or something?
No, she was.
Oh, okay. Okay. But I'm saying the summit issue, Momo, I'm not sure whether I'm right, but it will also clarify attend to issues that the financial sector charter limitations or things that you think have to be improved, your BBBE, your limitations in the procurement system within the sector itself. You know, those are some of the things that you'd also look at, not limited to those, including the data, the authenticity of data that we find. So I'm just pleading that that summit should really take place and make sure that it threshes out some of those things that we thought would be dealt with. Yeah, CBDA, I agree with Comrade Tandi. It's your baby, it's your agency, and see how you nurture it. If there are challenges. That meeting that Comrade Tandy is talking to, I fully agree that it must take place and look at the nature and form that maybe CBDA must take so that we improve on it as well. So.
5 minutes at most. Not even five, it's 3 minutes to one. But we'll give you five.
What more I can say.
I'm not making an input.
I just
wanted to consider the length of the process to collect that. I wanted you to take into consideration, and I wanted you to confer with Momo on that, so that when we finalize...
Okay, we'll do that.
Because
before I come next week,
yes.
We'll do that. Good, that's helpful.
But having said that, Momo, we think
this thing without any criticism of any individual here, right? We all don't know the implications. Even EFF, we'll think through carefully some of the things they're saying, what could be the consequences, right? So I think we're treading carefully, but we're also not going to be, like, indecisive. Okay, good. Having said that, you know what? There's also nothing to hide. There are some issues that might have to go into the NC's policy conference, right? Right? Nothing to hide. There are some things like, you know, you know, can see where I'm teetering when it comes to what Floyd is saying. But there may be others will say no, and then we say, okay, we're not the party makes the decisions, right? In a democracy, not the government that goes to vote or parliament, and the party must guide us. And by the time we come back in August, who knows, they might even invite Floyd Shivambu to have a keynote address to the ETC. Okay, the surrealism of these days, Floyd, don't be ruling it out. Thank you all. Now, the committee needs to look at the program. It's before you now. I think old John took my copy. Right. Colleagues, just look at the program quickly. It was emailed to you by Alan. Even though he's there at his house, he emailed it somehow. I don't know how it got done, but you got it now. Now, look, very quickly, we've got the Twin Peaks bill next week. Okay, let's go to the DA proposals are covered, right? Those that belong to other committees are referred to them. There's one thing missing. I sent the wrong version through to them this morning. There's an item 4 on the PIC in the fourth quarter. Yeah. So the PIC will be in the fourth quarter. I realized I hadn't saved the document. So when I emailed it to you at 8:16 this morning, I had not saved it. So just put in item 4, the PIC. And then that's the fourth quarter. And the JSE and transformation. This flows directly from the hearings we had, right? Where we don't know what they mean by black ownership, direct and indirect. So we told the JSE, you will come here. The cooperative bank thing also flows from the discussions we had in these hearings. Now, Zakhele may pick up other issues, Zakhele, that we agree that we will take forward in a separate hearing. So when you do your report, just check what we committed ourselves to. Teboho and Alan need to give you the minutes also. But I think the PMG minutes are very accurate. You can look at that, right? Whatever decisions we've taken that flow out of the public hearing, we have to have a program around it. Right. Is there anything anybody wants to say on the program? Yes, Mr. Mania.
Chair, I made the point in my speech yesterday about this committee shifting from legislative mode to oversight mode, and to some extent we're achieving that. Just on, you've covered me on the PIC, that's the fourth quarter, I'm happy with that. But I also feel very strongly that, and I put this in my notes if I recall, that we've got to look at the chief procurement officer's reviews of... In what report? Yeah, but I'm looking for a specific hearing with the... Where? Okay.
To save time, right? Because the chair does the report, right? We said in the report, as soon as the new chief procurement officer is appointed and settled in, we will invite him or her to appear before the committee. And or something like all transactions above 10 million rand. Besides, in the annual report, they should table it once. Mr. Lee said, yes, you're right, Eunice, we can't have endless oversight meetings, right? And therefore, it's fine if they even table it. So, what we are doing is exactly that. But you can put it in the report, it's fine, in the program. So let's put it in there. Number 5 is Chief Procurement Officer.
And the reviews. Then the whole question of contingent liabilities.
That's in the...
Okay. But then, Chair, before those quarterly reports are produced, I think we need to set out expectations of what we mean. Let me give you an example on other than contingent liabilities. Let's take cost containment, which I'm going to come to. Your argument will be that cost containment is covered in the quarterly report. To some extent, that's correct. But my expectation is quite different. What I want from the National Treasury is a detailed report for every single department who's complying, who's not complying, and who's applied for deviations. And I'm quite happy for that to be a written report. But that's what I mean by dealing with cost containment. Treasury have got all that data. Who's complying, who isn't complying, who applied for deviations in that quarter. So then we need an opportunity to set out our expectations of National Treasury's presentation. Otherwise, we're going to get one slide from National Treasury. That's what we've got in the past. So that...
I've said that before. Just put it down in a note to me. I'll send it to Treasury. It's not a big deal.
Okay.
Can I ask on that? Doesn't it go to appropriations, what he's asking for? I
yeah,
remember appropriations used to...
Appropriations. I wonder, yeah.
Appropriations used to
well,
do
okay, can we discuss that? But
I
the question is a fair one. I don't see a problem in it. And Treasury will be helped if Parliament also subjected to scrutiny in its fulfillment of cost containment. No problem. What we will do is discuss. I think you are right, Tanya. Good point. I think it will, and frankly, if it did, it's great. Because they don't have legislation, right? Okay. Next thing.
They were doing it. I remember the chairperson of...
Oh, they're doing it. All right, fine. Why don't you confirm, Mr. Release?
Yeah.
I mean, Mr. Are you not... do your own members not have any confidence in you? Aren't you the shadow minister? Why do you keep raising issues that are in other committees?
Well,
what about your guy there that's in appropriations?
I'm not sure that there are in other committees, Chair.
But what do you mean? Appropriations, you don't have a DA member?
No, I'm not sure that they deal with cost containment.
All right, fine, check with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the... Then there's a new issue which I think we need to look at fairly carefully as a committee. And I mentioned this in my speech yesterday, potentially diluting National Treasury's legislative mandate. I think we have to look very carefully at the new division of labour between... the presidency and the National Treasury and the whole question of prioritizing the budget. There is definitely a new division of labor being negotiated, and I think as a committee we need to look into that. Equally, Chair, you will know that there's now a proposal from the Minister of Justice that the counter-money laundering advisory body be re-established through regulation when it was when the relevant sections were actually repealed by this committee and by Parliament in the FICA Amendment Bill. We have to have a very careful look at the implications of that because the intention there is clearly again to erode the legislative mandate of National Treasury because if that council is re-established, it will mean that a body wider than the National Treasury, essentially the Justice Cluster, will choose the next director of the FIC and will also be the body, in their view, to hold the FIC accountable. And that will further dilute the mandate of Treasury.
Let me say something quickly. Firstly, maybe we invite Treasury to come and present in the third quarter, latter part of the third quarter, in one of its quarterly reports maybe. Oh, why don't we do it? To tell us what they're doing about implementing the FIC. Where's the regulation? Secondly, if something has been repealed, as I know it, where's Jenkins? He's not here. Legally, you can't introduce it.
Well, there's a big question. I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't think you can. We've been through this before, Derek. You know, I've been here thousands of years. You just came for a small stint. And when you're chatting, you would know these things. I don't think they can do that, eh? I don't think they can do it. You see, they could have done it as an interministerial committee if... Yes, they can still do it. The president, am I right, Derek? The president can declare an interministerial. That he can do. But to have a legally constituted council is out. As far as I know, and Mr. Masuta, Minister Masuta should know, he's a lawyer. So in short, why don't we, instead of you know, conspiracy theories and all that, by the way, who got FICA implemented is not the opposition parties, it's us. We, taking on our own constituencies, in short. So let's not go into that. Yes, Mr. Shivambu.
I wanted to propose, Chair, that we should invite the FIC, not just National Treasury, to tell us about the FIC, because I think there are other overlapping issues that came out in the public hearings where they say that they've been referring some cases to the Hawks and everything else. And so we need to look into that deeply in terms of what has to happen.
Yeah.
When there's non-prosecution on areas where there must be prosecution.
I think you missed the last meeting, but here it is on the 21st. I'm glad to tell you at long last, a lot of hard work. Can you please applaud the chairperson, not now, when you have time? All the committees. Said Luzipo's agreed. Franco Buchmann's agreed. And, of course, my wonderful comrade here, Joan, she's so wonderful. She said, okay, fine, she'll shuffle the program around. So everybody's agreed. That's why there's no more TBC left. I spoke to Minister Imbalula, I told you. He says, fine, fine, fine. He agrees. I wrote to Mr. Imbalula, Minister Imbalula yesterday, right, all of which I did while not listening to you, Mr. Mania, and it's been done. I was more productive than listening to you. Yeah, last point. Floyd doesn't care for your last point. Yeah, okay.
Chair, just on the last point on the
please, in fairness to is the last point. It's the time
yeah.
His last point.
On the whole question of the financial sector transformation
yeah.
Reform, there's a body that I did write to you. There's a body that's missing. Oh,
yes.
I think we need. I mean, a big part of the public submissions dealt with the transformation of the banking sector.
Yeah.
I would like the Reserve Bank, who's the regulator, to
respond. Yeah, but they
respond.
Were here. Yeah. They were here.
But they were just simply
on. Oh, I wanted to respond.
I'd
that's
like
not a bad idea. Okay,
formal
fine.
Response.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Fine.
Because
yeah.
We're going to
yeah.
deal with concentration.
Yeah.
Yeah.